Hello and welcome to Team White. I'm Alex in Northeast Missouri. We have Jan in South Africa as always. And today we have as a return guest, Alison Chablot in the United Kingdom. And she is someone who has been persecuted quite roundly and disgustingly by organized Jewry for expressing her opinion, and her particular medium is song. Although she can write as well, of course, but mainly through song. Alison, are you there, and how are you doing?
Hi, Alex. Hi, Jan. Yes, I'm doing all right. Surviving despite all the crap that's thrown my way. Just by these organisations, but by the British authorities. So I thought it'd be nice to vent my fury at these imbeciles.
So, It's kind of funny that I really suspect, you know, we hear the British song, never, never shall be slaves. But, you know, you would think, I guarantee Americans have no idea what's going on in the UK, and that you can't simply openly speak your mind, even though it's the exact same thing in Canada. And they're trying to do the same thing here in the US. But this woman really has been attacked, continually molested, and had all of her house come into and taken all of her electronic stuff in the way that they do in Germany, another place that we know about, purely for writing material critical of Jews. I mean, this is how outrageous it is. Well, what's the latest on your situation?
Well, there's been good news. I found out a couple of weeks ago that, in fact, the big case I was, my main case, you know, I lost this. They call it a landmark case, but it's not really, because I'm the only one who's being prosecuted under this Communications Act law for sending grossly offensive messages, which so far have been three songs. And I had this list of conditions attached to a suspended prison sentence. You know, they suspended me. They sentenced me to 12 weeks in prison, suspended for 2 years, with a whole host of orders basically intended to unperson me, to remove my voice from the internet, and to remove my support. You know, they really went after me. But one of the conditions attached to the suspended sentence order was a 12-month social media ban, and that ran from June 2018 to June 2019. So if it's more than a year, that's finished. You know, I was back on social media from a year last June. And I didn't go on social media during these 12 months, but I published on my website, alisonchablot.com. I published, and I knew that the Jewish organization who's been majorly involved in my case, they brought the private prosecution against me in the first instance. Yeah. That was then taken over by the Crown Prosecution Service, which led to my conviction. But they continually reported me to both the police and the Crown Prosecution Service and the Probation Service, because I was still publishing on my blog, you see. I hadn't been completely silenced. So in the end, retroactively, when this order was finished, when these 12 months were over, I was taken to court for a breach of my sentence, and I was found guilty of this breach and sentenced to 8 weeks in prison. Now, that was last September. I was released after 3 days on bail pending an appeal. There was a first instance of the appeal in January, and it was adjourned because we asked for disclosure. There is evidence, strong evidence, that we know that the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism had written to these bodies, the Crown and the Probation Service, and also to the Ministry of Justice, rattling their cages so that, you know, something should be done about this woman who's still being grossly offensive online. But they never disclosed, and in the end, they withdrew their case. So that is a win for us. That's a win for me and my legal team. We won. We won this appeal, and it was officially announced in court last Friday, the 10th Excellent. Of July. So that's a win. I mean, there's been absolutely nothing in the mainstream. You know, there was, of course, they all, the Jewish press, they clapped with delight when I was sent to prison. But there was nothing 3 days later when I was released from prison. And, of course, I won't be going back because I've won, not in this case, because I won my appeal. So I've been able to claim my costs, which is good. However, I've still got two other charges hanging over me. And one, if we go back to this January appeal, I mentioned that was the appeal in the Crown Court for basically what was a retrial of this breach case. And as I came out, of course, after the adjournment, having been granted unconditional bail by a Crown Court judge, I was rearrested on another complaint by somebody from this campaign against anti-Semitism for something I said on a radio show. So, of course, as Jan is recording today, I've got to be careful what I say, because anything that I do, and of course, now that I'm a convicted criminal with a criminal record, and this is what I do, I insult Jews in songs. Mm-hmm. And that's been dragged on for 6 months now. The 10th of July was exactly 6 months after this arrest. They've not charged me with anything. And I just say, oh, bail extended. Now, it's not to post anything online. Yeah. Right, so just a little anecdote about that. This is a first set of bail conditions that have now been going on for 6 months. Now, it's totally unlawful what they're doing to me in this regard, in regard to my Article 10 rights under the European Convention of Human Rights and Article 19, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, you know, free speech, no borders, boundaries, no political meddling. There's clearly been political meddling, and there still is. You know, they just absolutely hate me. They really, really hate me, and they want vengeance. They want their pound of flesh. But since last year, I did a couple of gigs in France last year, and the last one, my last public performance was last June, with Dieudonné, French artist. Okay. Well, he's half black and half French. He was a big, famous mainstream artist until he became, you know, aware of the double standards with regarding the Jewish lobby. And
He's the one who did the Quesnel.
That's right.
And he was. I remember they were going after him. I don't remember what year it was, but
They're always going after him. Two or three weeks ago, there were three court cases in 1 week. You know, anything that he does. I mean, the French police wanted to come over here and interview me because of the songs that I sang over there in June. Because since then, I've been banned from going back to France.
Yeah,
they're after me in France. You know, it's I speak French, and this. It's via this guy that I kind of got into this. I saw what they were doing to him. You know, it's just total persecution, lawfare. Oh, you know, you can't be diminishing the seriousness of the crimes against humanity during World War II, blah, blah, blah. But they can't take his freedom of expression away. They've done everything to try and stop him. You know, the same as they do to us. They go after our bank accounts, our PayPal payment functions, whatever. They've gone after him in the same way. Yeah. They've, of course, got all the theatres in France now. They're afraid of trouble, so they don't hire him venues. You know, he was filling people in person. We are not allowed to hold these views. I've been told you're not allowed to hold these views. You must believe in our narrative. Otherwise, you're a heretic, and we're going to prosecute you under these, what are these modern blasphemy laws. But and since then, since my gig with Dieudonné last year, I've been still in contact with him, and he has a co-author who I've been working with, right, as well. Mm-hmm. Now, this co-author, his name is Germaine Gaefe Cohen. His mother was Jewish, right? He's an exceedingly talented writer. I mean, totally filled. But this guy, he's a long-term prisoner in France. Right? He's in prison. He has more rights to publication than I do in Britain. You cannot take away someone's right to publication. You cannot take their right away for freedom of expression. Okay, then they have to deal with the consequences, because there have been these laws in France and elsewhere, and we've seen Alfred Schaeffer and Horst Mahler and Ursula Haverbeck and Sylvia Stoltz, and I think even Michel Renouf now will be on trial quite soon in Germany. But there's still no Holocaust denial law in Britain. So basically, I was convicted of a non-crime. Now, I knew that there's no Holocaust denial law in Britain when I wrote these songs. Yeah. You know, what crime have I committed? Anti-Semitism, quote-unquote, anti-Semitism. They're trying to get this legal definition through, but I think it's just having the adverse effect, because they're all doing it for Israel and for Zionism, therefore for Jews as well. I don't know. It's crazy. So that's one lot of bail, and they tried to, they shiftily tried to move it forward, because there's a 6-month time limit on these communication acts, summary offences. You know, they're not serious offences. You can get 6 months in jail maximum, I think. But at the end of May. No, I've not been posting on my website. I've kind of been going along with this do not post anything online bail condition. I woke up one morning to this hammering on my door. 8 thugs entered, 6 uniformed, 2 CID hate crime squads. For another song, a parody, in fact, I take the mic in this song about Tommy Robinson. It's not, you know, about Jewry per se, but because I use this famous song from the musical Oliver by Fagin, Pick a Pocket or Two. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they're now claiming that it's another one of these songs intended to cause gross events, but I've not been charged there, and I've got another set of bail conditions there as well. This is not just to put this is not to contact the supposed victim of my alleged crime, but they took all my computers. They took all my computers, and I'm in a shared house, so they took the computers that belong to other people as well. They took 4 computers, 2 tablets, 3 cameras, a hard disk, and loads of song sheets that they found. Yeah, it was in my bedroom, 6 coppers going through all my stuff. They found loads of song sheets, and some of them, you know, I've used when I've been on cruise ships, so it's traditional folk music from around the world, Cherdo Lindo, and he's going, oh, what's this? What's this? Is this another anti-Semitic song written in Spanish? It's in Spanish. What does it say? And there's stuff, there's memorabilia around my room, you know, there's song lyrics that I'm particularly proud of that around my room, and they're taking photographs. There's one in French and it says, you know, 6 million, which is the same in English. Oh, you've got to take a photograph of these lyrics because there's something about the 6 million. So what are they going to do? Get a load of translators to say, oh, yeah, we need a translation. How much public money are the authorities willing to spend on this case? It's just ridiculous. You know, they should have just ignored me. They sent the message of my songs around the world via my prosecution with the Streisand effect. You know, well, that's not my fault, is it? You know, all that free publicity?
Yes.
Going after you know, they want to persecute artists in the so-called liberal democratic West. Really? No, it's the last 5 years have been, you know, completely insane, especially with this legal business. I was persecuted in my professional life before then, so it's not as if I had the money to hire lawyers. It's the taxpayer who's been paying for my lawyers as well, because, you know, my career had already been attacked before all this began. It's what they do, isn't it? It's like Doug Christie said in the Zindel trial. They demonize you with all the usual labels. Then they isolate you, you know, by saying, oh, you can't associate with this heretical woman. And then they criminalize you, always in 3 stages. And you know what it's like, Alex. You've had a knock on the door from...
Yeah.
No, it's the way they went after me in this last instance of these folks, you know, physically restraining me and totally using excessive force for a complaint from a sad Jewish fishwife, right, who has nothing better to do than complain to police, and she's complaining about her, and I'm harassing her.
Yeah.
But all I've ever done is respond to this woman's provocation of me, getting me sacked from my job, giving my details to all kinds of people, getting people to send me distressing messages to my home address, even getting her crony uncouth troops to troll my daughter in Switzerland and my parents in England. An absolutely disgusting and vile creature. And yet she has the power, the Jewish privilege, to go and make a whining complaint to the Metropolitan Police in London, and someone gives the order for 8 coppers to turn up at my front door, to barge into my house, to go through all my stuff, to steal my computers and devices from me so I can't work.
Well, you know, it's just exactly like in the U.S. They're a concierge service for organized Jewry. And the Jews are basically all like that. That's why, you know, they can claim it's not a racial thing, but they've exhibited these same traits for thousands of years. And I don't know why our side has very seldom rationally responded, because what can one person do against this whole matrix of garbage where they really are like a butler service for these people? They call them up and whine about it. They initiate things, and then they portray themselves as persecuted, exactly as you said.
Yeah.
And even if they were some huge mainstream person, like the same thing they did, like you said, to Diodone, who was very mainstream, is my understanding, and as you've said, but David Irving, too, and just hound them and hound them and hound them.
All of us. Fred Leuchter, the same. Gemma Rudolph. Lots of people just keep saying to me, and I think they're right, you know, you're just going to have to get out of there because they're just going to keep coming after you. And of course, now I've got a precedent, you know, I've got a record. They'll just give me longer and longer sentences, and it'll end up, you know, I'll end up being treated the way that the Germans have treated, you know, the ladies. Like, they're only going after the women as well, because the women are speaking out. And they're really going after us and punishing us in the harshest manner to send a message, you know, you better not mess in this topic, or otherwise this is what's going to happen to you. And we're going to come after you and shame you and your family and your job and your baby. I think Leuchter, when it happened to Leuchter, he had to give up engineering, and he became a bus driver for a while. If I'm correct, I'm not exactly sure. But this is what they want.
Fred Leuchter up in Boston.
Yeah.
Errol did a movie about him. Yeah. That was a while back, but yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so they come after us, whatever. You know, you can write the Holocaust Handbook series by Rudolph now. I mean, how many books are in this series? And, you know, just want to turn up to court, all these books, you know, the pile of these books, and say, there you go, that's my defense. And, you know, but there is, as I say, there is no quote-unquote Holocaust denial law in the UK. So they obviously want one via my case, but they've not managed to. You know, it's been over two years since I was convicted. There's been nobody else. Nobody else has had any kind of conviction. You've got Count Dankula. He wants now to take his case to the European Court of Human Rights. Well, Giordano tried that and lost, you know, because you can't be using satire, even if it's, you know, sold as a satirical, theatrical, comedic, artistic performance. You can't do it. Yeah. You can't do it. European Court of Human Rights, which is just another, you know, manifestation of Zog and Jewish privilege, will not go for it. So, you know, the only people who make money from these cases are the lawyers. It's you know, it's not even worth going to Supreme Court in England and Scotland. I just, you know, caveat, Scotland is not the same law, but he was convicted under the same law as me, this section 127. Like you see, they didn't go after him so harshly. He made a grovelling apology and said, oh, it was just a joke. And now he's got 250,000 followers on Twitter, so, and Black Lives Matter in his profile. So Count Dankula, yeah. That is a friend, you know.
We should remind you, he's the one with the dog he trained to make a Sieg Heil.
That's right, to the command, gas the Jews, which was is repeated 23 times during the video. Of course it was a joke, you know, it was obvious. But yeah. I despair at... He's never really spoken out in my favour. Nobody has, you know. I have my few cheerleaders who I have to say I'm exceedingly grateful to. Ian Millard, he has a WordPress blog. He writes regularly about my case, ex-barrister, and a few other people. And, of course, it's very nice to get invited and chat to you two again, keep everybody updated about what's happening. But, yeah, they really want me unpersoned and to make it impossible for me to promote my work. I mean, obviously, I can't perform anywhere easily, you know, without being fully disguised. And even then, you know, people would recognize my voice, even if I used a stage name. So they just want me, you know, to not be able to express myself musically or, in fact, you know, indeed, in any way. They just want me silenced. That's it. They just want me silenced, gagged. You can't blog, and, you know, they want, I presume that they want some kind of social, antisocial behavior order clamped on me to be banned from the internet. But I think that with all the antecedents of my trial and how it's been dragged along, justice delayed, being justice denied, etc., and the fact that the Crown, that I won this appeal, but... Their excuse that it was no longer in the public interest, blah, blah, blah. That was just a fig leaf. They just didn't want to disclose. And the evidence that there is political meddling from the Israel lobby in my case, and I didn't have a fair trial because it's political meddling. We'll see. You know, that's not changed. The government in Britain, it's just an absolute disaster. What a disaster, this COVID nonsense. The British government have no idea what they're doing. And I'm afraid that, you know, the British public going along with this, well, you know, it just paints a whole picture, doesn't it, of what we've become.
What's it been like in the UK? How would you sum it up? I mean, living this whole time.
Well, personally, it didn't really change that much because the authorities have wanted me permanently locked down, you know, and unable to do anything for some time. I've been out every day. You know, I've not really changed my routine. I've been out every day. I've not travelled as much around, you know, gone and see my parents, of course. But it's you know, they put all these laws in. You've got to wear a mask and blah, blah, blah. I mean, the economy is falling apart. I mean, they announced what there's going to be 4 million unemployed in the first half of 2021. It's just a complete and utter disaster, but no one seems to care. The public are so, they're just like an emotional blob. Oh, we might die. Oh, we might catch it and, you know, somebody else might die. And they just accepted it, you know, like the slaves, like they are. They accepted this shutdown of their liberties. They accepted to be under house arrest, basically. And now, you know, Boris Johnson is saying, oh, you're going to have to wear a mask when you go shopping. But that's not been in place since the beginning, since whenever it started, the 20th of March. So now you've suddenly got to wear masks and... And I mean, every day, 200 migrants, because it's the nice weather and it's the summer, 200 migrants, illegal migrants from Calais can row their little rubber dinghies over the English Channel and come here. And then they're, of course, given asylum because they've been well trained to say, oh, my country, I have my religion is persecuted. Or, oh, my country, I am gay and homosexual are persecuted. Oh, come in. Here you go. Here's a flat. Here are some benefits for you. Oh yes, and we can, you know, we can teach you how to speak enough English so that you can then become a, you know, a parking attendant or a shop assistant, and we can continue to replace all the indigenous English people. But you know, it seems that the English people have let it happen. They've allowed this to happen, and you know, I just think the only the only answer is just to withdraw from this complete and utter insanity. And, you know, you might say it's accelerating to something that might bring us, you know, a sign of some new way out, elect a new social nationalist party, with an electoral route. But for the moment, that there's absolutely no chance, and especially not with our first past the post system. You know, we had an election in December. The Conservative government got a big majority, and now the Labour leader is Zionist, and just a Zion in the pocket, another one in the pocket of the Zionist lobby, Keir Starmer, ex director of public prosecutions. Probably a Freemason, I would imagine, that if you want, you know, that high position, a Blairite centrist. So, you know, it's all the waves caused by the anti-Zionist Jeremy Corbyn, who led Labour for 5 years and never got in because he was subjected to the treatment as soon as he got in the opposition. But there was, you know, there was at least some opposition back then until Boris was wheeled. You look, you know, apart from the odd posh areas, Knightsbridge, etc. But even there, you know, I walked down my local high road in London, and you know, I hear Arabic more than I hear English. I see far more non-whites than I see whites. It's already too late. We've already lost these towns to foreign tribes.
Pretty much.
That's very interesting, Alice.
Are you still writing songs?
Yes. I've not been doing so much recently, because I've had all my computers stolen. I've got a nice little setup downstairs, you know, I bought a new laptop, and you can hear my sound isn't too bad, and you know, my keyboard plugged in. So yeah, there's a video but the police took my computers and it never got released. So, and it's very hard to work, you know, with no equipment.
Well, you know,
yeah, I could still put something together.
You follow any of this? Some of the crypto stuff is eventually going to become platforms where you can get, you know, paid and probably anonymously some of that, and put out material to people.
Yeah, like mimes and Steemit and all the blockchain stuff.
Yeah, some of them. I was talking about like library.org or lbry.org, which I've not fully investigated, but it's moving in that direction.
Yeah.
It was a technical sort of semi-answer to.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other solution for me, you know, is, well, just to get away from English jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And to go somewhere where I can post what I damn well like. You know, and they can't do anything about it. And the travel to Europe, I don't know about that. You know, I've not risked it so far. But yeah, that's what they say, that I'm going, you know, I could perhaps go to Russia and ask for political asylum, because, you know, what is my life apart from worrying every time there's, you know, a rather vicious knock at the door or an email from my lawyer? You know,
Russia, or maybe South America or Central America.
I
can think of. The U.S. is going kind of hard in the same direction at this point.
Yeah, or Malaysia or somewhere. But you know, it's like going away from your culture. It's
especially once, you know, you're
past a certain age. Yeah,
past a certain age. Yeah, no, when they talked to me, they were interested in whether I had ever gone to Russia or was thinking about it. I'm like, what? American. My 50s. I don't really want to start over in Russia and learn Russian. What are you talking about? But they're obviously paranoid about that. But Russia's not free of Jupas law itself.
There were some cases. I think there was a case last year, and a guy was acquitted of age denial. There was quite a section of revisionism in Russia. I can't remember the guy's name, but they're still active. I saw something 2 or 3 weeks ago. They're making videos in the town of Paul. Is it? It begins with P, and I can't remember the guy's name. But he was acquitted, so they're not looking. They're not looking to persecute those who adhere to revisionism. Lots of countries have got these laws. They don't prosecute Belgium and Holland, for example. They are far less strict than the German-speaking countries are the worst. Austria, Germany. I think Austria has the longest, or did have the longest-serving revisionist, who was an engineer, Wolfgang Fröhlich. He's not a very high-profile revisionist, but that's probably because he's been locked away for the past 12 years or something. Oh. They only let him out because he's mentally unstable. That's the other thing that they're going to use now, isn't it, as well? You know, the virus and the COVID virus and the virus of anti-Semitism. It's a kind of a mental illness. That's what they're going along with now. Yeah.
Alison, in terms of countries, what about Hungary?
Yeah, there's quite a big exodus of people in Hungary. But we saw what happened with Greg Johnson. I think he was banned from entering. Was it Denmark?
The forums.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so it's Nick Griffin, he was banned from Hungary. I think he was expelled and then banned and banned again. So and I'm wary of any kind of travel to Europe. I would not go in. I've got a lawyer friend who said that the way I should do it would be to get the ferry and he would come and meet me at wherever, Calais or by car. That would be the way to get into France. He would be able to get me. They can't refuse somebody on human rights grounds. They can't. But then, you see, once I'm there, because of this show that I did last summer, they might, you know, there's no time limit on these sacrilegious. You can't be sacrilegious. You can. I think David Irving. It was something he said several years prior to him being jailed in Austria. Yeah. It was in the 80s. It was in the 80s. He'd said something, and he was jailed for that years later. So they could, you know, keep it going in Switzerland as well. You know, I had residence in Switzerland. I lived there for 23 years. But there as well, you know, they do have these laws. Sylvia Stoltz, she was, and the Swiss, they're in with the Germans. You know, Sylvia Stoltz gave her speech in Switzerland, but she was sent to jail in Germany. And the same with Gerard Menuhin. He was fined for his book, Tell the Truth and Shame the Devil. And that was also because of the German PDF of his book that was published in Germany. Nothing to do with him. Yeah, he wrote it. And he was the one that got fined. So they will come after you, whatever. Despite the obvious undemocratic nature of these thought laws, hate speech laws.
Well, if I may add some of my own thoughts, as I've observed these Jews and what they do, and I'll give you an example of something that happened right here in my neighborhood. In the suburb next to me in 2017, suddenly, somebody raised a Nazi flag at a house. They had a flagpole, and the Nazi flag went up. And Jews heard about it, and they went absolutely crazy. And they wrote about it in our local newspaper. And then the Jews said that they are going to take this guy to court. And I was then interested in trying to find who this guy was, because they didn't give the exact address. And purely by accident, about 2 years later, I was at somebody's funeral, also a National Socialist. And I was at this guy's funeral, and then I ran into this German guy. And in the end, we were talking, and it turned out that this old German man, he was actually an East German, he's the guy who raised the flag at the house. It turned out he's the guy who lives in the suburb next to me. So I said to him, you know, what happened to you? Because in his case, what he's got is he's got like a military club. So he's got a bunch of old guys, and they are interested in military history and stuff, and of course, German stuff. And he's got this little club, and they get together. And at a point, they were filming something. And so that's why they put up the flag and they filmed some stuff. And when I tried to contact the newspaper where they published the story, I said to, I decided, you know, let me try and find this guy through the newspaper. So I wrote to the journalists and I said to him, listen, you've got a story about so-and-so. Can you put me in touch with him or his daughter? Because they also mentioned that his daughter apologized profusely, etc. And I noticed that the journalists did not want to give me any details. And I noticed a long time ago when I once was mentioned in the media here in South Africa, one of the newspapers was talking about somebody else that I was associated with, whom they were attacking at the time. And they then said, well, this guy associates with the racist website African Crisis. And the next thing, my little website started getting like 20,000 visitors pouring in. And I was so pleased with it. I put like a welcome thing up on the front. Hello, everybody. So, so you know, as they're saying, here's the racist. And next thing you know, is people just pouring in and they love my website. They didn't know about my website until I'd been mentioned in the newspaper. And I noticed now that in this more recent incident with this German, that now these journalists know that they mustn't tell people who's who, because otherwise the racists are going to meet each other. Well, anyway, despite all that, I actually ran into this guy at this funeral. And I said to him afterwards, and I went to his house and I said to him, you know, so what exactly happened to you? And he said to me, you know, the Jews came and they made a whole lot of, a whole ruckus about it. He said the Jews were sneaking around his house. He said all they had to do was just come and like knock on the door, you know, ring the bell at his gate and he'd go and open it and he'll go and talk to them. But he said instead the Jews were sneaking around his place and talking to his neighbors and asking questions. And then the Jews sent him a legal letter and they threatened to take him to court. And of course, all of the actions by the Jews got into the newspapers and their newspapers. So I said to him, now what exactly happened? And he said to me, firstly, in South Africa, it's not illegal to raise the Nazi flag. So he wasn't committing a crime. And he said to me, what happened was somebody came and offered to help him to write up his own little legal affidavit and counter to this legal threat from these Jews. And he said he even went to the Jew's house. He delivered the note. He made the Jew sign for his legal sort of counter to this. And he said to me that afterwards, he never heard from the Jews again. But in the newspapers, what was interesting was in the newspapers, they all wrote about how they were going to go after him, how they were going to shut him up, etc., etc. And then, just like you, where you said that when you got out, they didn't write about it. They only write certain things at certain times. They, in my view, there are two issues here. The one is Jews are trying to use a kind of a psychological warfare and a kind of terror on whites. They don't have all the laws going all their way all the time, although in some countries like you guys in Europe, it's getting closer and closer and getting worse and worse. But they are very careful to write up certain things, and it makes it look like they win all the time, but they don't actually win all the time. I knew an old guy who was what you could call South Africa's number one anti-Semite. His surname was Smith. And the top Jewish organization in the country went after him. And the difference was that he had legal knowledge and he knew how to defend himself by himself, even though no lawyer, no attorney in South Africa would defend him. He fought them in court. He knew how to muck them around. He mucked them around for about 3 years. Eventually, they passed a sentence on him, and the sentence wasn't that successful. It basically said to him he's not allowed to write about Jews in emails, etc. And it basically just stopped him from putting comments in emails and on websites. And so the Jews ran around saying they'd won, they'd put this anti-Semite in his place. But actually, he got off pretty lightly. The only other final thing I want to say, Alison, is that when I look at the Jews and Jewish history, I think that the Jews are so paranoid because they actually function on a house of cards. And they know from the past, they know from all those hundreds of expulsions that have taken place, they know that once this thing called anti-Semitism starts, that it's the beginning of the end of their scam, that their game plan is going to fall apart. And I think that is why these Jews are so jumpy, that they're all ultra paranoid. They know that their game plan, they know that just individual people doing a few things and starting to ask questions, they know that this is the beginning of the end for them, that from here onwards, it's going to go downhill.
Gilad Atzmon calls it, what is it, pre-traumatic stress disorder. You know, you hang out a Nazi flag and all the, you know, the what did Eric Weinstein say the other day? That it was some comment about we all know that we're just between pogroms.
Who's he?
It's some commentator. I've heard him mentioned in a couple of streams.
They typically are all regeneration. We're rounded up and we're forced onto trains and we have to run away. And it's such fine garbage.
They're so self-absorbed. That's how they've managed to, you know, then so collective. They do fight amongst themselves, of course they do, but they, as soon as they control both, you know.
Well, everything is defined in relation to them, so it doesn't matter anything else you've done. If you've criticized Jews, you are defined in all mass media as an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Jews are a comparatively minor part of life. Just happen to have an obnoxious cultural oppression of all others that's impeding my living my Aryan life freely.
Yeah,
and that's it. Like, we have no, you have only right to exist in relation to Jews and serving them, and which is exactly what their religious books say. So,
yes, exactly. But to say these kind of things, to draw attention to it in public, that's anti-Semitism, and it's against the official definition or the working definition. Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Well, but it's true. These things are true, and there's repetitive. Constant historical facts that show that these things have happened time and time again, yet one cannot bring up these subjects, one cannot talk openly about this subject, and the disproportionate influence of the Jewish Israeli lobby over every institution, over every organization, over our politicians, over our houses of parliament, your senate, etc.
And it's the same in every Western nation. I mean, right to the ends of the earth, which let's just define as Perth, Australia. I mean, I don't even remember the dude's name. It was something Irish, of course, as you would expect. But, you know, he's harassed by Jews out in Western Australia.
O'Connell. Brendan O'Connell. Is that
right? Yes. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Maybe this may have been a couple years old, but I mean, they're just anyone who speaks basic facts about them. But in their culture and their mindset, simply existing as a non-Jew is a crime, let alone doing anything. And we're here to serve them, and I'm getting kind of tired of it.
Yeah, I was sometimes listening to the convert there, the Australian convert, Ford, is his name. You know, I don't agree with what he says, but I think it's interesting to listen to that. And he has sometimes interesting people on.
Luke Ford?
He had a guy last week.
Let's set it up. Porn guy or born, and he's a Christian who converted to Judaism.
Orthodox.
Some people are
Judaism.
Probably familiar with him. He interviewed McDonough. He was trying to get me to, but I wouldn't go on with him. Did you ever interview with him?
No.
But he has had a lot of interesting people, as you say. And so,
yeah, he had another Orthodox Jew on there last week talking about, you know, the Orthodox attitude to evolution and Darwinism. And at the end, he was quite fascinated by this Ghislaine Maxwell arrest, and what is the view? You know, according to the Torah, because they're like the fundamentalists. They don't believe in evolution, do they? So Ghislaine Maxwell, the guy, was saying, well, the view in the Orthodox community was, well, you know, was it heaven? God forbid, you know, she did all this stuff, but was it for Israel? You know, it's too early. That we demand that she is pardoned, because what she did for Israel. We don't know what was going on behind the scenes. Maybe there were threats from Iran or from Saudi Arabia. So maybe, you know, God forbid, she did these things. She was doing it for Israel. So maybe in a few years' time, you'll be hearing for the, you know, like, as in Jonathan Pollard, etc., that there will be this pardon from Israel for Ms. Maxwell, because what she did for Israel. And his last comment was, oh, a tough shit, Goyim, you know. Yeah, you're our slaves.
They really do see our kind. Yeah, they see us as something to feed on. I mean, that's what was going on. They were feeding on enjoying these young, underage white women.
Yeah.
And it, rest assured, it was white women. It wasn't young Jews. It wasn't young coloreds, maybe 1 out of 100, but it was young white women. They're feeding on them, and they're using them to entrap their parents. I mean, everything Jews do, they set it up so they win multiple ways in everything that they do. And we'll see what happens to this awful woman. But hopefully, obviously, a lot of the sex tapes, whatever she has, will come out in court. But I don't know if that's where you'd want to bet, seeing what happened to Epstein. So,
then the royal family, Prince Andrew, all these people. I imagine that the people who are involved are quite nervous. But you know, we've seen it before, haven't we? You know,
they're just no care. You get to a point where there's just no one with any character left any white land. And then my thing, where does that come from? Where does this complete absence of, I don't even like to use a term, but I don't know another term for moral courage or just basic character to say, no, these people are lying shitbags. They're literally criminals in multiple ways, almost all of them. They work. The thing that is absolutely known the most for me is the case of Mary Fagan and Leo Frank. And just, I mean, you would think you would get jaded with this stuff over time, but when you see that, they literally have been lying about that for over 100 years as a team, as a group.
Yeah.
They're absolutely 100% thick in lying about the worst possible case, where this adult married Jew is going after a 13-year-old girl and rapes her, even if it's just jabbing something into her because she refused him, and then murdering her. And then Jew journalists, publicists, literally the Albert Lasker, the head of, you know, public relations in the U.S., the main advertising guy, all kinds of lawyers. They defamed an entire region and now an entire race. They tried to frame, but I mean, and they carried out this charade for over 100 years. So they're an intergenerational lying criminal syndicate. They really are. Like, they're not really something. They're a mafia.
Yeah.
They're literally a group of criminals that are genetically related that are trying to feed and prey on the rest of us.
And they seem to thrive on destruction, you know.
Yes, everything instinctively subvert, because when you read all the stuff that Hitler and his people said about Jews, or you read what someone said in France or somewhere else in the, you know, 1800 to 1900, it's the exact same thing they're doing now in America.
Yeah, and before that, you know, you've got the ancient historians saying the same thing. And Jesus Christ, you know, well, Jesus Christ, well, you know.
Well, back before even the Catholics, they rejected Jesus, and that's when they got bad. Well, then how come you can find Romans saying stuff before then?
Yeah.
They always acted the same way. It's racial characteristics.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't be surprised to find that anywhere else in nature, you know, that something preys on something else. And nature is completely full of deception and parasitism. And this is an example at the human level. So when you teach that, oh, no, humans aren't animals, we're like somewhere between animals and angels, well, then how do you account for this behavior?
Well said.
And, of course, I'm not religious. Other people are religious. But I really see that's a big, big stumbling block in our appreciating what is actually factually going on.
I agree.
Alex, there's something that I've come across here in South Africa. I did a video about it.
I believe in rationality because I don't need to believe in rationality. It's there even if I reject it. Yeah. I eventually got to come crawling back to it because it's the only thing that actually works.
Yeah.
If it rested on me, I'm limited, you know?
Alex?
That's how it is for everybody. Yes.
Alex, you talk about what's that girl, Leo Frank and
Leo Frank and Mary Fagan.
Yes.
From 1913.
Yes. Now I found
and see I get news alerts on Leo Frank, and they always, every single time, and it comes up at least every 3 days, at least a couple times a week. Always some publication is claiming that Leo Frank was wrongly convicted. He was the victim of injustice. This is a guy who raped and murdered a girl and tried to frame other people for it.
Well, he, Alex, I've...
100 years ago, no less. And they write a musical about him. I mean, Alice and I appreciate that more than anybody. They wrote a musical about him. It's made tons of money. And all these stupid goyim line up to get parts in it. Around the world.
And we still got Roman Polanski wandering about. You know, there's no statute of limitations in France, but there's these actresses who are older than me now coming forward saying, oh, yeah, you know, he abused me when I was 17 in a chalet in Switzerland, but he's allowed to swan around France, swan around Switzerland in his chalet in Gstaad, go to the premiere, his new films. And you've got Maxwell and Epstein. They were allowed to swan around for how long? I mean, it's just ridiculous. And Alison Chabot sings a song, you know, you've got eight thugs coming around and stealing all my bloody laptops. There's just no consistency.
And that's that's so intrusive. We got to get across how intrusive that is. I mean, first of all, being broken into your flat, broken into early in the morning or whatever. But then, you know, that's the way they do it in Germany. In free democratic Germany, where they destroyed all the books of the people who fought Jews. But, you know, coming in and stealing your computer where maybe you have your private thoughts written on there, I mean, that's beyond obscene. That would be extremely angrifying. Then you got to go out and buy more computers, and you don't know if they're going to be safe from being broken into.
Well, exactly.
You know, I hope you write 100 more Jew, Jew realistic satires, personally.
Yeah. Well, look, and I've got some. I couldn't possibly do anything with them because they really are way too based. You know, I will have to go elsewhere and publish, you know, if I'm going to do this. If I'm going to publish the ones that I've got, you know,
I think you ought to go to like Costa Rica or something. Personally, get out of the bad weather and
it's quite nice at the moment
where it's not super politicized. I mean, it's, God knows it's hard nowadays, but
I just despair. I despair. You know, my family's going back generations.
Yeah.
In this very small country, you know, it's a small piece of land when you compare it to.
It is.
And you know, not even the bloody great moat around us can save us from, you know, another 200 migrants crossing the channel every day, and all the others that are being flown into our airports.
Yeah.
It's just, what do you do?
It's like that everywhere in the Western world. I mean, I've talked about how they just bring in police here, you know. Jan's already got, they've already got blacks at 95%. They still have illegal immigration in South Africa, which is amazing. I don't think too many people know that, but I mean, yeah, why can't we have one effective place in the world? Well, we're going to have to fight for it. That's how nature puts it. And I guess we got to teach people that.
Totally, Alex.
If you're not free, they had a beautiful line in the Constitution, you know, you're supposed to be left alone in your papers and effects. Well, that's a contravention of that, even though this is the UK, that's supposedly where our thinking came from.
Yeah.
This woman wants to be left alone in her papers and effects to write whatever songs she feels are appropriate. And that's the Aryan way. I mean, you're not saying UK, oh, you can't say this, you can't talk about them, you can't use these facts. That's garbage. It's complete garbage. And people with any kind of spirit would be fighting back. Where are the men to fight back? We're so unmanned society that no one's willing to stand up and laugh at these assholes?
And you see that it makes no difference. So Giordani and me, you know, we've both done stuff in French that's written by this guy whose mother was Jewish. Therefore, you know, technically he's Jewish. This guy is observant. Mm-hmm. He's been in prison for 20 years. But, you know, he is an observant Jew. So let's have him up in court and explain his reasoning for writing the lyrics. You know, he wrote the Show en Masse song, the famous song. Giordani was convicted for that one. He's just been convicted for a second song. So, you know, he and I were both being convicted for our songs, and that the lyrics are, I'm really, you know, I'm boiling hot in front of my barbecue. If the sausages aren't kosher, I won't know what to do. And he's got done for singing that, you know, because the barbecue is a reference to ovens and blah, blah, blah. They really, they are so desperate, you know, to rattle it home that you cannot make jokes about this holy event.
Did you ever have any dealings with that Sacha Baron Cohen or whatever?
No. He made that speech, and then the ADL put out a list of, I think you were on it as well, Alex, possibly, of some list, a hit list, and I was on it too. They wanted my Facebook account taken down.
He's been running around the U.S. doing his garbage that he's done in his movies, but Jewish nationalist, hostile to any kind of free speech.
Exactly.
So that's the satire that they're fine with, showing how evil and racist and stupid whites are.
Yeah.
But yet a woman wants to write a song that points out some of the facts
about one of the Jewish atrocity
myths. And I've been doing Arthur Butz's. He was like the first main rebutter of the Holocaust, and you know, he was harassed for a long time. No, he's discredited. He's not discredited. He's fully credited. And this is the world we live in. But no, I just wondered if you'd ever come across him anywhere. You don't know him, but he wants you banned from doing anything.
Well, the ADL, tried to put out. What's the ADL got to do with me? I'm in Britain, you know.
Luckily, we're a little farther away, but like I think I may have said when we talked to you before, I've had letters from French and German police that were the German one, oh, you're endangering the youth by some blog post from 10 years ago. So these are extremely, just imagine that, writing to some cross seas country that has different laws from you and acting like you're somehow able to control what they do there. So just imagine if you were anywhere within arm's distance, the German speaking lands are going to try to grab you. You know, I don't know French so much, but it's absolutely insane. Or like Allison said, I mean, they grabbed Irving many years after something he'd said. So almost ex post facto.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You shouldn't have said that thing back in 1987. Okay. And then you do a bunch of time in prison for it. It's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Well, what do you have scheduled for the next year, to the extent you can talk about it or have even thought about it?
Well, see what charges they want to bring against me for this, for these new allegations. One radio show I did last year and this new song. We'll see what happens then. I've taken up gardening to try and take my mind away from it, because you know I look at social media, and especially we briefly touched on COVID, you know, and that's still, you know, the conditions are still running apace, and of course we had all this social distancing, and suddenly we had these Black Lives Matter protests with nobody wearing masks and nobody obeying the social distancing rules, and then we had the police force getting down on their knees, and as well as that, we're supposed to go out on a Thursday evening at 8 p.m. and clap for the National Health Service workers. So I think it's going to be a hard, you know, autumn and winter. It's going to be hard, I think, and we're just going to see the complete desolation of the British high street. People are, you know, what's next? Cashless society, so that they know everything that you're buying, you know, you can't use cash anymore. The only way is to go up into the highlands or the hills and just escape from this complete and utter insane world we live in. You know, you can identify, if you're born a biological woman, you can identify as a man. you're born as a white. Going along with that logic, you know, okay, well, I'm biologically white, but I'm going to identify as biological.
Yeah.
Why not? You know, I'm going to identify as some other ethnicity than white so that they'll bloody well leave me alone. Johnny tried that. He went on stage, and this is when his troubles began. He went on a TV show and disguised, and his voice disguised with a hat and ringlets, claiming that he'd just converted to Orthodox Jewry on this TV show. And everybody loved it. Everybody absolutely loved it. But the next day, the lobby came down on him. And that was it. That was years ago, 15 years ago at least. And ever since then, you know, he's been the public enemy number one in France. But the funny thing is that, you know, yeah, he's black. So, they're having trouble, the Jewish lobby, with the Black Lives Matter lobby, because, of course, the Black Lives Matter lobby, they're trying to play the same thing, aren't they? Oh, we're the victims of the evil whites who sent us, sent our ancestors across the ocean and in chains.
Yeah.
Got us on the plantations, blah blah blah. But of course, there's all this stuff about the original slave ship owners and the plantation owners and the sugar industry.
creep out in the last couple of days. A couple of NFL football players rather stupidly misquoted Hitler, but they got onto some of that Farrakhan stuff where he proves using Jewish sources that they absolutely dominated that trade.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even some of the Jewish NFL sports writers running around doing their typical guilt by association thing, forcing everybody, they try to get everybody around you as well as attack the target to denounce you. And that's one way this tiny group is able to leverage its power so much.
Yeah.
But you know, some of those blacks understand that. That was the top story in Daily Mail yesterday, actually, Nick Cannon. It's okay to be anti-white. In fact, it's mandatory, but you better not be critical of Jews in any particular.
Yeah.
What they're trying to enforce.
And the corona, I don't believe, if you're already sick with something, or you're, you know, in your 80s, or slightly younger, even if you're 80s, then yeah, COVID can be a, you know, problem. But there's no difference between the death rate with a normal seasonal flu pandemic.
People are just so weak-minded,
I go to the supermarket, and you know, more people are wearing masks because it's going to become mandatory in a week's time. And if you go down the aisle and someone's there, and some of them are kind of like, oh, step away from you, and you know,
they've scared mainly the women, but the Walmart is that what you're referring to? Walmart is doing that on this coming Monday. Making mask wearing mandatory.
Oh, well.
Because we were actually not so bad here, but now it started to really resurge, and I see more people started wearing masks again, and I don't know what the fall's going to bring, but it's frightening to think about. But yeah, objectively, there's not that much reason to worry about it. Except that the only reason to worry is if you have preconditions and you're, you know, that idiot in New York forced people who had it back into forced nursing homes to accept them. And that's where a lot of those deaths came from. So these people are complete morons. Even if they were trying to do the right thing, they're too stupid to figure it out.
Yeah.
But, it's gonna circulate and it's something real, but what are you going to do about it? It's invisible.
The Daily Mail reports yesterday, unemployment could peak at 13% in the first quarter of 2021, which would mean more than 4 million people on the dole queue.
Yeah.
So if 4 million by 2021, then, you know, it could be 8 million. You know, it's not inconceivable. I'm kind of like going off Ian Millard's blog with this, but...
Allison, have they done any bailout there like they've done in the U.S., or have they sent out any stimulus checks there?
Oh yes. And they just... The last one, they gave the theatres and the arts some money, because all the theatres are closed and they won't be opening again this year. So that's a massive, you know, it's a massive part of the economy in London's West End. All the theatres are closed, all the operas. There'll be no Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year. And of course, all the workers, you know, they were offered this package of money, but all that's going to have to be paid back. You know, so...
Instead of income loans.
But we're going to get another tax rise, you know, the increase from... What was it, 15 to 17.5% VAT? That was after the 2008 bailout. Well, it's never been removed. You know, we're still paying that extra 2.5% VAT on everything. pretty much. So this is what's facing us. You know, they have just ruined our economy with this lockdown, with the lockdown, how it was wheeled out by Boris Johnson's government. And all the time this was being wheeled out, flights were still coming in from all over.
I've got a question for you.
Oh.
Is Boris Johnson, how is he seen by people like you and other Brits? Is he seen as a Jew, a Muslim, or how is he looked at ethnically?
Yeah, a cosmopolitan, should we say. A cosmopolitan. He was a trained clown, you know, Jew entertainer style, that was produced at the right moment there at the end of 2019, after all this Brexit stuff going on for the past 3 years. He was produced, and let's get Brexit done. In short, he went around in his yellow jacket and his hard hat, visiting workplaces and industrial zones. And I said at the time, and I got really criticised by the nationalist community for saying this, or some people in it, that, you know, if Boris Johnson gets in, the British people, they will deserve everything that's coming to them. And so now, you know, he was the saviour, and he got this massive majority, 80-seat majority in December. But now the hashtag yesterday was Boris has failed the UK. More and more people can see just the ridiculousness of it. They went to, they said, oh, yes, you know, masks, mandatory in takeaway food places. And then you've got this Gove, Michael Gove, high up in the cabinet, what's his post exactly? Minister for the Cabinet Office. That's what he is. A Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, and he was photographed in a takeaway shop without a mask. So now suddenly, it's not obligatory to wear a mask in a takeaway food joint, and people just see these kind of things that are happening every day. There's supposed to have been a report published, and he's not even read it. He pretty much admitted yesterday in Parliament that Boris has not read it. So he's just seen as an idiot. And he's got about 10 kids with I don't know how many different women, but they're certainly not all with his ex-wife. There's 4 or 5 different, you know, he's a philanderer. Yeah, he's expecting another baby, I think, with his girlfriend now. It's got about 10 kids. All from different women. Well, not all, I don't know, but you know, half of them.
I knew he had one in the last couple of years, it seems like, but boy, I didn't
realize. Well, there's also talk that he has a daughter with this Jennifer R. Cooley woman. That's not his current girlfriend, that was the one before. And he's got one of these D notices out on her to stop her publishing the fact that he's the father of this 3-year-old daughter. Plus, there's this other one now that's just about to pop out. I think he's got 6 with his wife or ex-wife, whatever. And she was philandering as well. She's a barrister of QC, apparently. I didn't see anything, but that's the gossip. So no moral character, no backbone. He's just been in there, you know, at Eton, one of the Eton lads, waiting in the wings. Theresa May had him as foreign secretary to stop him blundering, making the usual blunders. And he was mayor of London. No, and all his massive projects, he announces these big, fantastic projects, but none of them came to fruition. There's a cable car. What a waste of money. A waste of taxpayers' money. A garden bridge across the Thames. Never got built. He's now talking about a bridge to link Scotland and Northern Ireland. Come on, it's just this big, rhetorical, waffling away about Britain and England, talking about kind of like Churchillian style. But he's a clown. He is a clown. And he's not fit to run government. His cabinet, they're all Jews or Muslims or Hindus or Irish. They might not be Irish, but they're all Zog, agents of Israel. We've got Home Secretary Priti Patel, Indian from Uganda. As Millard says, you know, if it hadn't been for Idi Amin, Priti Patel would be fronting some grocery shop in Kampala. But she's our Home Secretary, and she is thick. She can't even bloody pronounce English properly. So it's like, I was sitting there doing what we're doing. She can't say doing. She can't. She's just really irritating. She looks lovely, you know. She's this beautiful, dark-skinned woman. She is. She looks very photogenic, but that's about all that's going for her. She is horrible, horrible, evil woman, only interested in herself and her own pockets. Caught red-handed in Israel when she was an international development minister, I think, under Theresa May in the last government. Caught red-handed. She should have announced these visits to Israel, that she wasn't actually just on holiday. She was having meetings with certain quite high-up ministers in the Knesset. But she didn't declare the meeting, so she resigned. But in fact, it came out later that Downing Street did know about her trip to Israel and did know that she'd be meeting these people, but decided, you know, hopefully that nobody would notice that Priti Patel was going and doing business on behalf of the Israeli government, Zog, on behalf of the Zog government here in Britain. But they knew. It was only because one of these Israeli politicians put out a tweet that he, you know, it was an honor to me, blah, blah, blah. And so she had to resign. And now here she is. She's our Home Secretary, the one in charge of law and order and rounding people up, rounding people like me up, putting them in the gulag, getting a squad of goons, the ant or mob to them, the Keystone cops to come round breaking my door down. It's just it's a horrible,
terrible situation.
Really is. And you know, like you say, Britain's values and all this, you know, democracy, parliament, the mother of all democracies. And
you guys don't even have the excuse that we do here of having literally millions of retards who believe in Zionism because of the Bible. So the people in Britain aren't religious, is my understanding.
No, they're not. Our religion was taken away from us with all the, you know.
So they're just kind of beaten down and used to having government dictate everything. And
yeah, I mean, there are still, you know, we got the Church of England is completely cucked. It's worse than Catholicism, and they cucked as well, didn't they, after Vatican II? So there's no point. The Archbishop of Canterbury, this guy who's got a strange background, he was brought up by his stepfather, who was, I'm not sure, but then it found out his biological father was actually Jewish. But it's a very muddy story. I'm not sure of the facts of this. He stood up in the Foreign Office on Holocaust Remembrance Day, when my trial was still ongoing, and made a remark that, you know, I should be punished. This is the leader of the Anglican Church saying that about me. You know,
Church of England.
An English woman, parents, both parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, going back generations in this country, and this comes along and basically says, you know, I should have been locked up for anti-Semitism.
And this is the leader of the main.
This is the leader of the church. This is the leader of the Anglican Church.
And he discovered that he was Jewish, like so many of these American politicians.
Isn't it amazing?
I don't believe there's one of them who was not aware of that ever, like Kerry or Madeleine Albright. They know it darn well. It's just a charade they run.
And Theresa May's father, he was some kind of vicar. He was like a renegade vicar, Anglican vicar. But her mother, and not a lot of people know this, and it's never mentioned, Theresa May's mother was a Lebanese Orthodox Christian.
I wouldn't have gathered that from looking at her necessarily. I thought she looked very English to me. But
I wondered what her origin was. That's interesting. Well, I read somewhere, isn't she also Ukrainian or something? Or have I got it wrong?
I don't think so. I think that's the story I've heard.
Lebanese.
She's an Orthodox Lebanese, Arab, Lebanese Orthodox Christian.
Well, has she receded into private life now, or?
No, she still gets up and she still has her seat in the Houses of Parliament. Yeah, but she's just not the leader anymore.
Yeah.
Not Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was a terrible prime minister. She really was, and so was David Cameron before her. But Boris really takes the biscuit.
He is an idiot.
He really is. And what did he say? He made some joke about more briefs than Calvin Klein. That's what he said about Keir Starmer, leader of the opposition, the other day. I mean, it's just, you know, you just think, who's going to be impressed by this kind of flagrant, freeing comments in our Houses of Parliament? I mean, it's just a shambles. And you see how they shout at each other from either side of the house, and they're all jeering. It's past its day. We need a complete rethink. We need a completely new electoral system, because there's absolutely no chance of my voice or people who think like me or like us being heard under the current political system. Both parties completely run by the Zionist lobby. The 80% of Tories and members of Parliament and members of the House of Lords, they're all friends of Israel. And it's pretty much the same in Labour. The Labour Party did so much to really get rid of Corbyn and the Corbynites and the anti-Zionists, and they've managed to do that. And the Labour Party is now firmly back in the hands of the Zionists. So it's just, we've got Zionists on one side of the house and Zionists on the other. Voila.
Alison, I have a question for you. You mentioned earlier Roman Polanski. That's a guy that I also looked a little bit into in the past, and I was horrified by the kinds of things this guy's got away with. And can you just maybe elaborate a bit more?
Well, he's wanted in America, isn't he? He's wanted in America, and France and Switzerland, they refused to extradite him. He did undergo some kind of sentence. He was ordered house arrest, and he had an electronic bracelet. Now that was in Gstaad in Switzerland. So he managed to wangle it. His lawyer, was it Dershowitz? I don't know, but some lawyer managed to wangle it so that he could spend his sentence in his luxury chalet in Gstaad in Switzerland.
You know,
now, he went to Poland recently. Yes. So there is some kind of extradition treaty between Poland and America. So there was noise in the press, you know, are the Polish authorities going to accept this demand for his extradition? But no, he just, you know, he just can get away with it. It'll be like another, well, Jimmy Savile, you know, he got away with even more than that. You know, he wasn't even put under house arrest, was he, Savile? At least Polanski's done a bit of house arrest. He's free to swan, like I said, free to swan around Europe. But yes, a 13-year-old girl drugged and raped. Yes, wasn't it, Polanski?
Is that what he several, did? And, okay, because I...
Something like that.
He was out in Hollywood doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of these Jews, they're called 36 shorts, a little shrimpy little people, and they're into children. That's what a lot of it is. 36 short, referring to the length of their coat, so they're small, and they like small. Think like, not saying it about him, but who's that songwriter? Paul, I forget his last name.
Simon, Paul Simon.
Paul Simon, yeah. Think of his size, and like in that video related to Chevy Chase, they're all that little shrimpy type, and a lot of them, Amblin, Katzenberg, and Geffen, and the other, there. Some of them are queers, but a lot of them are also pedophiles, and that's kind of what sort of comes out through some of the Me Too stuff.
Yeah, the Randy Newman song. He's Jew as well, isn't he? Short people got sharp.
Randy Newman was not. He was a Jew, but he was larger. But a lot of these like heads of studios were little shrimpy little Eastern European Jews who were like, you know, 5'4" or something.
Yeah, yeah. And the women, the same with the stubby, short, stubby legs.
Yeah, well, the Steven Spielberg, another one. His first movie was called like Amblin. Like from 1967, and the hidden key to it at the end is the kid, he's into like children. Mm. And you can actually find that on YouTube and watch it. It's pretty disturbing once you understand what's going on there.
Yeah, that's the culture
they've created is the point.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, you mentioned it briefly, the Me Too thing. Yeah, you know, you've got all these cases. Alain Soral was talking about this quite recently, and he's another French, quite well closely connected to Dieudonné. He's more a politician, a publisher, big website, Égalité et Réconciliation, the biggest dissident website in France, and the courts are always going after him as well, the Jewish lobby. So he was talking about this guy, and he's known in the English-speaking world as well. perhaps not so much in America, but a Muslim called Tariq Ramadan. And he's one of these Muslim intellectuals, and he'd argue with his fellow co-religionists and be on mainstream platforms. Well, he's been in prison in France because of a Me Too campaign against him. Mm-hmm. And two women came forward and said that, you know, they'd been abused by this misogynist. But it's always the same. You know, these women were consenting. And it's kind of mild.
Oh, yeah.
Mild, you know, S&M kind of stuff going on. But they were both consenting. But now suddenly this guy was in prison because of the allegations of these women against him. Mm-hmm. And you don't get the same with people like Polanski. The Me Too Brigade, they also want to make
a lot of them. Yeah, they're happy to go along until it no longer benefits them, and then the tide turns. And look at the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp thing. I mean, she lies. Yeah. She exactly reverses the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
And you wonder what's going on in some of these people's heads, but they obviously believe they can get away with darn near anything.
Absolutely.
She drinks a lot of wine. I noticed that. Yes.
The big thing though, Alison, that freaks me out is all the paedophilia, you know, from Epstein, Polanski, and then there was the Jew Lord Jenner in the British Parliament, and all the little boys that he was having sex with in Parliament, and didn't some politician in Britain actually defend paedophilia and say something like, oh, it's part of our culture?
It's Harriet Harman and the Paedophile Information Exchange. It's old news, that, but I don't know the details of the story, but yes, but she's still in Parliament, Harriet Harman. I think she's the doyenne of the Labour.
And you mentioned MPs. Jimmy Savile as well.
Sorrell also says this. It was in the same program. You know that they go after the Polanski types and Epstein, Jana. They go after the children. It's their caviar. You know, it's the caviar of sexual experiences going after children, and because they're rich and successful, they've done all the rest of it. So they want.
That's psychologically. They get the frizz on from we're above the rules and we can break the rules even in the most horrible thing. We're going to be satanic pedophiles because we can get away with it because we own the media and we're going to back ourselves up.
Yeah, and this Jenner's
middle people are just there to supply us with sexual fodder.
Jenner's daughter is a reform rabbi. She's always appearing on the BBC, and his son is a lawyer. I think they're always getting a platform. You know, always talk. And of course, they deny the allegations against their father, who they claim is dead. He claimed dementia to avoid being questioned in court. But at the same time, he was still scuttling along every day to the House of Lords, getting his 300 quid expenses a day or whatever, how much it is, and voting. And dementia didn't stop him making decisions to, you know, cast his vote in our democratic system, but apparently the dementia did prevent him from giving evidence from the witness stand in court against all these allegations against him. Yeah, Lord Jenner, given a peerage of the realm, as was Jimmy Savile. Who's a Sir Jimmy Savile? They all are. It's you get into this club, and it doesn't matter what you've done, what horrific things you've done, you're still going to be get to meet the Queen and be given one of these titles, a gong, as they're called.
No.
A title with letters after your name.
Alison?
I got a question, actually.
In the case of Jenner, if I may just finish, in the case of Jenner, wasn't his death, his so-called death, struck me as really weird. Just as they were finally, after like 20 years, trying to get this guy on trial, and they've got like 20 witnesses, and then suddenly he just dies in his bed in his sleep at night, and it makes me think of like Epstein.
Yeah, and Robert Maxwell and all the others. Was Maxwell killed? You know, some people say that his death was also strange, than that. Well, he was buried in Israel. Jana. Yeah, we don't know. We don't know, do we? I mean, because Glenn Maxwell. I said, what they're going to do with her? Give her a new identity, plastic surgery.
I wonder how many of them are living in Tel Aviv. I'm telling you, that's my thinking.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, how do the people in the UK look at what's his name, Harry, that married Markle?
Oh, dear, it's terrible, isn't it? Well, it's like he's like a, you know, the complete representation of the British people, isn't he now, Harry? He represents the cucks that the Brits and especially British men have become, getting down on their knees and doing everything that his silly wife tells him to do. It's I saw a funny post today as well. You know, when there's a royal wedding, you get all this commemorative porcelain, like plates with a nice portrait. People are giving them away, and the charity shops are now full of these plates of Meghan and Harry because nobody wants to celebrate this royal wedding anymore. All that money, £2 million for their cottage there and the wedding and all this, and they're just buggered off. Meghan, you know, is coaching her rather sad and pathetic Harry about what to say to the media and, you know, how to combat racism.
Well, how long do you think that has been the case? Because I've read serious academic works. I did an audiobook of, I think her name was Douglas, writing about Victorian, kind of the mentality and how women and preachers came together to kind of, women are more moral, and create that whole middle-class deference to women that has just ramified terribly, in my view. How long has this been the case in the UK that these men are just wandering around holding the end of their wife's dress up? It's pathetic. They're completely afraid to disagree or lead in any sense, and this has destroyed the entire society.
Yeah, and it's getting worse. Well, I'd say it's, you know, began after the war, you know. When,
I think after the war, huh?
Well, it's got gradually worse, and, you know, and then the waves of feminism and all this, it's just been implemented gradually, bit by bit. But the whole thing has been in planning for a lot longer than that.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't happen overnight, but because it's anti-natural and anti-biology. But now they're even getting to the point where they're just deliberately going after the biology as well and the chemical.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is actually, as I've said many times, astonished me that there's this, I had no idea there was this pent up or easily manufactured group of people who want to try to transsexualize. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
They're encouraged.
Yeah. Everything is being encouraged. You're encouraged. The youngsters are encouraged to think about their, you know, it's okay, your sexuality, drag queens. And it starts off with getting drag queens in to read books to primary school children, and the gay agenda. And then, you know, as soon as they're in primary school, then they get the Holocaust agenda, and they have to role play and all this, and based on mostly works of fiction like The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. You know, it's just they get them as young as possible, and of course, with each generation, they've been under the impression that they've been given more rights, but in fact, it's the opposite is true. And yeah, this transgender business, goodness me, I mean, you know, even right. Germaine Greer, you know, one of the what did she say? It's not because you lop off your penis that it's going to make you into a woman. Mm-hmm. Of course it's not. And those who do that, and they go off to wherever, Thailand, or to get the operation done because it's cheaper, and then they end up, you know, with just these dreadful consequences to the surgical operations being done. You know, the people really do believe that they can go against nature in this way. Just shows, you know, what stage of madness we are at as a species.
If I may add something, I think the real game here from the Jewish point of view is to destroy the white male. The white male is the problem. The white male is the one who undoes what they do. You know, therefore, those goose-step marching Germans, they're evil, but you can be a transsexual freaking pedophile. What's it? You can belong to NAMBLA and all those things, and all that is good. But goodness me, if you want to join the army, then you're an evil dog, you know. And when I look at a lot of the trends since World War II, look at the white men with hair like women. I look at lots of old music videos. And to me, it's like everything they've done is to take the white male away from being a male.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's where the threat vector might come from. So they're going to, you know, sexual liberation is political control. They preach whatever destroys the family, whatever yes. destroys the psychology of anything good, wholesome, natural. They want to destroy it and pervert it and subvert it. And yes, it's ultimately it's for racial reasons. It's not for moral reasons. It's to destroy a race that's competing with them. And I maintain it's simple. It's a simple analogy to other animals.
Yeah,
they're not going to stop because what they do works, and they've I think they were born that way and they built a culture around it. So they know how to destroy these other societies, and we are among the few who have woken up to see. Well, this is what they're actually doing to you, and there is a rational understanding of what they're doing, and there is a rational way of opposing it too.
And
but when you mix in all the religious and the rest of it, then you start. Oh, God wants it. Does God want it?
And now
we're a slave
Israel.
Population that yeah. they feed off of? And now, because of course, if that's what God wants, then maybe find a new God or start doubting him.
Well, they consider themselves to be God, don't they? And
yes.
You know, now there's Israel. Now that they have Israel, so they got what they wanted. They got what
they don't really
want
to live there, though. They want to escape.
No.
Alex.
And we all know that the Hitler quotation was exactly appropriate. He said they have no thought of living there. Their thought is, you know, they can run there when they get in trouble.
Yeah.
Like I accused of being a pedophile, and that's exactly what's going on. Financially swindle people from there.
Exactly. There's more pedophiles per square meter in Israel than there is anywhere else in the rest of the world.
Is that true? I've never seen that stat.
I'm not sure that's true, but it's sad.
It might not be. Might be.
I know they have huge. They have a huge amount of gays or queers there. So I don't know if they're immune to their own poison or what, or they're not immune fully to their own poison. But they certainly promote all forms of sexual deviance.
Yeah,
particularly and because it works. Whatever works against family formation.
Yeah.
The Jews will support.
Oh, they did that in the West Bank and Gaza, didn't they?
Yes.
There was some intifada. They just broadcast porn.
They went in there and started preaching porn and saying, you got a curfew, you got to be inside. Oh, what are we going to do? Well, here's porn forced on your channel because they know it destroys people.
Yeah.
That's why they're so pro-porn.
Yeah.
And even the porn is politicized to promote race mixing,
which
is a point that Catholics who are against porn will not tell you because race mixing is not a problem for Catholicism. Indeed, in certain places, they've even mandated it, which someone made me aware of. But like they had actually done that because they don't want people thinking about race. They want them focused on Jesus and their spirit. But Jews are always going to use porn to destroy other societies, get your mind off being focused on being serious and intellectual.
And of course, with the internet, they can get the children even younger or addicted to porn. It starts at the teenagers as soon as they're into puberty. And even before, when I was teaching in Switzerland, because staff meetings and the computer scientists would warn us about these programs, you know, and it's all fluffy, cute little characters, but in fact, it's, you know, pretty hardcore porn aimed at junior school children, you know, 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Or younger. So the internet has been a wonderful thing. You know, it has, it enables us to speak to each other today and to get our ideas, sharing our ideas across and talk to people. But at the same time, it's, you know, it is really, really dangerous, vicious place.
Oh, yeah. And they would be able to find whatever porn they wanted, but not hear, like, your satirical song.
That's right. And you hear all this stuff in Britain about these grooming gangs, you know, which are street grooming gangs in Asian areas. You know, mm-hmm. The guys will hang around when school's out and, you know, entertain relationships with these girls. And But there's all kinds of other forms of grooming, especially online, and you don't really hear about that. You only hear about, it's the Muslims, but it's not the extent of grooming. Grooming goes on in, you know.
So what the Muslims are doing in the street, the Jews are doing online. There's evil people
in all of them, you know, all groups and whites. Sure. I mean, this girl who was killed in a park in the north of England, it was an Albanian, but the way that the nationalists can sometimes put it across, you know, oh, it had to have been a, you know, Asian, Muslim, Pakistani, whatever, but no, it's an Albanian. You listen to Farah Khan, Nation of Islam, and we have quite a lot of points in common and a common enemy, surely. So to keep going on, you know, Tommy Robinson, counter-jihad stuff, oh, it's the Muslims, it's all about the Muslims, and Islam is the biggest threat, and we need to ban Islam. But they never say the same thing about Judaism.
They put these people up as fronts. They absolutely pay for them. We know that in the rebel media out of Canada. There's always Jews providing false right-wing, pseudo-nationalist solutions in every Western countries, and that's part of the system.
Yeah.
Is fake opposition to the system.
Exactly. State-approved nationalism, as we should say. Well, they will promote people like Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson still gets promotion. I don't think he's raking in the donations as he did a couple of years ago, because the day I was convicted, he went up to and was arrested outside court. You know, my really huge, important case, but no, all the headlines.
So he came out of nowhere, and although he's this big British nationalist, well, you don't come out of nowhere and get even semi-neutral coverage unless the Jews are backing you.
I agree. That was his big war horse, wasn't it? The grooming gangs, it's always been that way. But before that, you know, you did have Nick Griffin and Mark Collette going to court because they tried to expose the grooming gangs. They were both acquitted, but then the BNP fell apart, and so you got the EDL, the English Defence League, which is Zionist founded, as with all the defence leagues, and Tommy Robinson being promoted. But I think people have, when he was in prison last year, that was quite a big turning point, actually, because a lot of people realised that, you know, there were these double standards with regard to the Islamist issue and the Judaism issue in Israel. And so he lost a lot of support there. Some of his Israeli colleagues put out a video slandering Mark Collette and a couple of Mark Collette's close colleagues, and people were shocked by that. I think, you know, that was the beginning of the end for Tommy Robinson. He keeps getting kicked off all these platforms. But in the end, the biggest problem Tommy Robinson faces, and I would say that that's true of nationalist movements in Britain, not so much in Europe, but especially in Britain, that they just don't appeal to enough of the voting classes to get anywhere. And with the electoral system, that's never going to see any kind of victory. I mean, the BNP, British National Party under Griffin, they tried it. They got a couple of European members of parliament and a couple of councillors, well, a few hundred councillors, I think. But they're all fell apart. They're not going to do it now in this current climate. They can't even manage to get, Collette can't manage to register his patriotic alternative brand as a political party. I just can't see how it's useful to lead people down the path, you know, that there is an electoral solution when there clearly isn't. There clearly is not. There cannot be an electoral solution at the moment with this system in Britain, unless there's some radical changes to the voting system and to the way to
yeah,
the way
see, that's an important statement, and I agree with that. And it's the same in the U.S. These people, a lot of them, don't understand. You got to have the physical force first, and then the electoral follows that, because the system will cheat you every step of the way. Even when you're trying to, like Allison wasn't running for office, she's simply trying to do private content, or not private content, but write songs, write articles. You're not even allowed to do that, let alone run for office. So you have to have the ability to physically fight back. That was the first thing that basically the lessons of Hitler apply today. Hitler basically more or less said, I was willing to have an intellectual disagreement with my opponents, but they wouldn't let us speak.
Yeah.
So we had to decide either knuckle under or physically fight back, and that's exactly where we are today in all of these Western lands.
It's exactly that.
So we
physically that.
Fight back, they're just going to keep doing all the same dirty tricks. And we don't have any – you don't have an endless bag of money like the Jews do. You don't have an endless bag of lawyers willing to work for you. You don't have an endless number of people who are willing to support you in any particular way. So we have to come together, and that's where you – until we start striking blows, and I mean physical blows, it's not going to change.
Well,
that's
been
my idea for a long time.
I think the idea with Colette, you know, he wants to kind of lead a movement that will, if it reaches political status and is registered as a party, will turn into something like the Ralliement National, Marine Le Pen's type of nationalism, and the AfD in Germany, these kind of kosher brands of nationalism, you know, where they're not going to counter signal Israel. It's just still, it's all it is. It's the Muslims. But, you know, and the people complaining with these same tired, worn accusations, that they, you know, the Black Lives Matter has kind of like made them sit up and look and say, oh, yeah, but what about the blacks? It's not just, you know, the Asians and the Muslims. It has made, I think, the Black Lives Matter, and it has made people perhaps more inclined to have a look at the racial aspect of it.
Really good.
But for the moment, I can't see that there's not going to be any success. And we've got all these little parties nationally. We've got this For Britain and Britain First and I can't remember, the National Front. You've still got the BNP. It still exists. There's, I don't know, there's five or six or seven or eight little, tiny little nationalist parties. It just shows, you know, and they're all fighting between themselves, as usual. It's always been that way in British nationalism. You know, everybody accusing everybody else of being a spy. And it's just pathetic. It really is pathetic. The petty infighting, people just can't see it, and they jump in there and start accusing their fellow whites of being, you know, traitors and spies and working for Hope Not Hate and working for the Jews and blah blah blah. It's just our society has created a generation of people, and no one has the qualities to be a leader. And they're all cooking to the Me Toos and the feminists and the woke brigade. I despair, really. It's always the same. Maybe desperate times will bring along somebody who's capable of inspiring people to lead a movement and create something that's worth doing. But I really don't think that a political party working along racial lines at the moment in Britain, no way. There's no way that they're going to allow that to take off. And you know, it's fair enough to Colette. He's got this good, intelligent Indian guy at his side, and there's an author who's half Pakistani from Glasgow. You know, he's not being racist in your traditional terms. That, oh, he's black, you can't be a member. You know, you can't do that in Britain anyway. You can't discriminate. If you're a political party, you cannot discriminate on skin colour. You've got to accept everybody. But, you know, at the same time, then Colette is saying, "Am I right? Ban Islam." So what are you going to do? You're going to ban Muslims who are white, but you have black Pakistanis coming in, and it's there's no coherence, no consistency, and no real plan. It's just, oh, we've got to come together and do grassroots politics, and then walk up a hill and put out a White Lives banner. You know, it's just there doesn't seem to be
Alison,
much of a solution, I'm afraid.
Alison, I'm a big believer in worse is better. I've noticed it here in South Africa. This COVID stuff, for example, we've had more severe lockdowns than you, and we have to wear masks in public. It's illegal in South Africa. You cannot go out without a mask. It's illegal, and you get turned away at stores and everything. And there are other restrictions that they put in place. Oh, they went to town here in South Africa. They They stopped cigarette sales. They stopped beer. Wow. They stopped liquor. You can only buy liquor on certain days at certain times. It's like the Soviet Union. I kid you not. I went to the shop to buy a bottle of wine, and it was after 4 o'clock, and the black said to me, "No, sorry, you know, we don't sell liquor after 4. And then there was another day. I went on a Friday, and I was there before 4 o'clock. And then they said, "No, we can't sell it on a Friday." and so it goes on. Meanwhile, in South Africa, the we've got some senior ministers who are involved in illegal cigarette sales. So while they themselves have made rules to say you can't do this, you can't do that, meanwhile there's a whole criminal, like a American prohibition type thing going on. There were even blacks who went and broke into liquor stores and things in the suburb next to mine. But anyway, all this COVID stuff and the impact on South Africa, it's so bad. It's so bad. I was without electricity for 37 hours this week because suddenly our electricity went down. And then when they started looking into it, they found that there were cables that were damaged. And we're not sure. We think that they're hiding the fact that criminals were trying to break in and steal the cable. Earlier in the year, criminals wiped out all our telephones in two suburbs here, mine included, by stealing the copper cables. I saw that
they steal the copper. Yeah, they steal the copper cables to make jewelry to sell in the to sell on the street. Well, I remember that from Zimbabwe, from Rhodesia.
Is that what happens there? No, here they've got places where they just sell it straight and get a price for it, and they're also now. Yesterday I saw. They are stripping all the stuff off the railway lines. We've got electric trains. They're ripping the cables out, everything. Anyway, the bottom line is that our economy is set to shrink by at least 7% this year, at least, but it might be more. And I reckon, my guess is that I think we're going to have various forms of lockdown and laws probably into next year. And the exact extent of the economic collapse is huge. Now, some of there are many whites now who are absolutely freaked out by what's happening. Businesses have been wiped out. People have lost their jobs. Even those who've gone back to work, the businesses have got so little. I've got so little in the way of customers and things. And I can see that for the first time, truly, all kinds of whites who aren't in any way political, who are always spineless and weak, they are now actually really afraid because they're realizing that, you know what, you know, we're going to have no food. We're not going to have other stuff. And I must say, the worse it gets, the more I see the whites starting to stick together. And we've also had infighting just like you in our groups. But what the groups are now doing is they are sticking together much more, etc. I reckon just let the system go into, you know, let it just go down the drain. It's the only way forward. Eventually whites will just realize that nothing works anymore. And the other thing that I really like that's coming out a lot is in some of the stuff you were mentioning, you were talking about the hypocrisy. You start seeing like the Jewish narrative breaking down, the black narrative breaking down as things reach all kinds of weird situations that liberalism can't defend any of these points anymore. So I just say let everything bloody collapse in a heap, because when people find that they can't feed themselves and so forth, then you're going to see real action. You'll see real fear. Real fear. It's the only way. So anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to say one more thing about the coronavirus, which I found despicable. And is the coronavirus, the lockdown, was it just a ploy to reset the economy? Because they know it's going to crash anyway, and this time they don't want to blame the bankers again, like happened in 2008. So they're blaming it on the pandemic. And of course, there's all this stuff with the you're saying about the corrupt politicians and their tobacco dealings. Well, you've also got people like, you know, these health companies race to find a vaccine. And then in order to be able to travel abroad, you'll need a certificate proving that you've had the vaccine. So it's all a massive, big money-making scandal. Was it to set the economy? But, you know, the worst thing that I've heard that's happened, I've got a friend called Mary. Hello, Mary, if you're listening. Her mum is quite elderly, and she had dementia and cancer and was in a care home. And the mum died alone because nobody was allowed to visit the care homes. So all the people, you know, weren't able to be with their loved ones. And the lady was very ill, and obviously dementia, and didn't have her mind there to be able to see that. But it was so upsetting for the families, not being able to visit, you know, their dying relatives. Because of this seasonal flu pandemic, coronavirus, it's just that there's something behind this, something bigger. It's not just a virus. I mean, we've got a common an ancestor, if you believe in evolution. We've got a common ancestor with this coronavirus going back, you know, billions of years. So it's been, you know, throughout human history, we've had these battles and, the Spanish flu or the Mexican flu, I can't remember, beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah, Spanish.
That came back as H1N1 in 2009, was it? It's the same virus, so they come and they might adapt a bit, and then they might get a bit weaker, and then there'll be another mutation, and then there'll be a strain, and the RNA will modify, and it'll be a, you know, slightly different flu with slightly different symptoms or none. And most people don't have any symptoms. It's just this fear-mongering and panic and getting the people to feeding on their greatest fear, which is death. You know, it's our greatest fear, isn't it? Most people, I imagine, you know, are dying. And just use this, in fact, as an excuse to reset their economy because it was going to crash anyway. I agree with you, Jan. This is accelerating towards what will be, you know, the end of our...
the end of
Western civilization. It's not really Western civilization, though, is it? It's Judaized, since the past couple of hundred years, and since the beginning of fractional reserve banking, I would say.
Alison,
industrialization.
Yeah,
I have some comments on this. When I look at the first and foremost, Alex and I have discussed this, and we totally agree. This whole thing is just fake. It's a scam. It's rubbish. It's not real. It's not dangerous, etc. The real issue is the lockdown. The lockdown is the thing that's destroying the world. And when I look at the statistics coming in from different countries, not just all across Africa, do you know all across Africa they predict that across all of Africa, we're going to lose 30% of our jobs across all of Africa. And when I look at what it's doing to countries, to the Western world, to America, to Britain, to et cetera, I want to tell you that to me, I look at COVID-19 as the 1929 of the century. The 2020 is a rerun of 1929. And I'm wondering to myself whether this is a deliberate ploy to create chaos and to see if Jews can start wars. And I'm just looking at this BLM and stuff that's been going on in America and everything. Everything is, you'll find the hand of the Jew in all these things. And I'm wondering whether Jews are doing this because they're seeing a rise in anti-Semitism. And like you say, also, if it crashes now due to lockdown, then nobody can blame the bankers. I'm wondering if we are on the path to actual bigger warfare and problems.
divide and rule, always the same, isn't it? And of course, it's the 30% less jobs in Africa with all those natural resources and the most beautiful parts of the planet.
When
Black Lives Matter, they've got all this fantastic continent. What have they ever done for their people? They just like ripping up our statues, tearing down our statues, and so why don't they go and do something for their roots and for their civilization, their blood and soil?
Yeah, they're all coming over here.
Yeah, they're all coming over here, but yeah, we're so evil, and there's and our country, they buy a packet of sugar and you're basically, still profiting from the, making them the slave traders profit, aren't you? And
we
live in interesting times, that's for sure. And what will the next decade bring?
Hopefully it'll crash some of the real estate in some of these giant cities as people are really fleeing in the U.S. They're fleeing New York and Chicago, which has just been utterly destroyed by black violence and Jewish criminal rule, and that's the machine that produced Obama. But people are, I saw someone, I don't know what the average price of the house in the U.S. is, probably about $250,000 or something, but some guy was saying, he wrote a column about moving from Illinois to Utah, which oddly enough, when I was young, that's what my parents did, but Illinois was not quite so bad back then, but it's now terrible, and paying $15,000 taxes a year on a $380,000 house. So that's even that's probably about four times the taxes in Missouri and like two times the taxes in Texas, which are pretty high. So they're driving all these people are trying to escape the cities and the lockdowns for COVID and also find some kind of real estate that's not crazily taxed in order to pay for these subhuman violent idiots.
Yeah.
But that's what we've got. We've got Jews and, you say this clown running London along with the Pakistan running the UK along with the clown running London. But here in the US it's the same thing. Every big city is run by this combination and they grow over time and they're just weeping sore spots in the US. And then the hinterlands are trying to be semi-reasonable, but over time it gets more and more difficult as the numbers shift.
Yeah, and of course you've got the minorities. Some of them, they're trying to coerce. Yeah, as you said earlier, the Muslims and they're just tools, aren't they? They're just being used as tools.
Yeah, they're brought in and they're absolutely just used as tools to suck up your money and dilute your political power and degrade your culture. And you're supposed to sit there and only thing you have left is, you can go to church and worship Jews there. And it's just pathetic. Yeah. And the church is love. They love. My love is the only solution. Love is love, 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 love. No. Everything is love. No. Anything opposed to this garbage agenda is hate. And these churches get a lot of money and they help all these invaders. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
Love is one aspect. It's not the entire thing.
Yeah.
Psychologically or mentally.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not all you need. It's maybe one portion of what you need.
Yeah. It's not all you need, that's for sure.
It's not all you need. Some inferior UK songwriters once said, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The superior songwriters know what's up, and there's a little more to it than that.
Yeah.
Right, Al.
Wagner knew what was going on, yes, for sure.
And you've read his words about, he called Jews the plastic demon of decomposition.
Yeah.
My God. And the guy's he's a musician, and that's what he's saying. So he was a first-rate essayist as well.
He was, yes. I agree with him entirely. Looking back at my musical training, reading Wagner's essays in the hindsight of all my musical training, I can just, completely relate to.
So now you comments. Speak German, right? Not just French.
Not so well. Not so well as my, not so good as my French.
Okay. Well, your pronunciation was so good. I assume that you did. And from being in Switzerland, but maybe you were in the French part of Switzerland.
My French is really good, but my last 4 years teaching, I taught music in a German-speaking school, so I got, you know, I managed to get by, they have dialects over there as well. It's not quite the same as High German. I've been back to Germany since then, and yeah, I can hold a conversation. You know, French, I'm really fluent, and I can read and write, whereas German, I struggle a little bit, but I can get by. Yeah, and I can sing quite a lot of songs in German. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, music brings people together, and I think that's a Now I've got a Jewish neighbour, and he was singing the other day, and I've never spoken to the guy, but I wanted to tell him. I said, "Oh, your singing voice is good. It's a lovely singing voice. Mm-hmm. Oh, do you fancy? You know, I'll accompany you, and we can do a duet. And then, you know, we could publish this duet, Alison, with her Jewish neighbour and a duet. You know, see, we win by singing." And of course, they want to stop all this. You know, they want to stop people going outside and meeting and talking to each other. So it's setting in a paranoia about your fellow. You know,
it's just so dumb. And you see people, and you're like, oh my God, you people have no sense at all. They're copying what they're told to do.
There are some still quite a lot of Irish people around my way in London, and they've been here for generations. You know, they were immigrants, early immigrants to Britain in the 20th century. And they're all really old, and they all still walk and do their shopping, and they sit on the bench. And none of them have been, you know, adhering to the coronavirus, even though, you know, most of them are over 70, but they sit on this bench every day, surrounded by shoppers and market stalls. And I just think, you know.
I don't know how it is in the UK, but in the US, I mean, you look at these people and you're like, I can say about 15 things you could do that would make you a lot healthier than wearing a stupid mask.
Yeah.
But then you're nasty and you're a hater. And you're supposed to be like a Cabbage Patch doll type person these days. And it's just you're not born that way. It's pathetic.
Well, Alex, isn't
really, they really are training people to be encephalic, to just have no mind, to just absolutely do whatever they're conditioned to do. You know, whether they created this or whether they manufactured the response or said, oh, this is great, never let a crisis go to waste, let's use this. They very clearly have plans for a one world cashless order, and they're going to identify every single thing you're allowed to do, and if you depart from it, then you get the social credit garbage that China already has. So I don't know. I guess I see it going the same way you said. Just it's going into the dumps. But I for anything positive, I would just say look at the crypto stuff. Yeah. It's like I think it was Aristotle said. You know, don't worry about criticizing the old system. Worry about building a new one if that's your inclination. And you kind of have to get something that's not completely negative out of all this. Because overtly, when you walk around, you just don't see anything positive.
Yeah.
Not at any official level. Maybe among private people, they're doing okay and they're doing sensible things. But officially, you just can't get any kind of access to the mainstream.
Yeah.
And then people listen to TV and they pretty much ignore everything else, or at least to the extent of they may not agree with it, but they fear to go against it. And I think that's all the Jews really need.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, isn't this just proving old Goebbels true? There's his prediction where he said, if the Jews win this war, then the world is going to be a very dull place. And that's where we are.
Yeah, it'll spin through the heavens and deprived of any kind of sentient life and just go back to being a mud ball.
Yeah.
Just stupid brainlessness. I mean, it is absolutely pathetic. What is?
You're either a goodie or a baddie. And we're all baddies,
yeah, you know.
That's it.
It's just this retarded reductionism into hate and love, and you're either a hater or you're a good person. And you try to use facts in any of these people, and maybe it's the Beremazov thing. You all know the YouTube video, but you know they just, oh wow, man, they don't have any facts to counter debate you with, and even the notion of looking at anything rationally or analytically is becoming increasingly foreign to a sizable chunk of the population. I mean, like more than 50%. They just don't understand like anything other than an attitudinal response that they'll just be positive as a intellectual reaction to anything. They don't really believe anything can be figured out or thought of. Just do what you're supposed to do. Just tell me what I'm supposed to believe and I'll comply with it.
so I can get back to eating and watching sports. And that's and that's the horizon of their minds, as Orwell said.
Very exactly. Correctly. Yeah, and watching.
And instead of some thoughtful music that someone like Allison might write, what did they have in Orwell? They had these stupid wrote by number songs, and by God, that is what like country music in the U.S. has degenerated into. It's sort of feminist sense. It's all women can do no wrong. I want to drink her bathwater. I want to worship. It's some form of that. And if it's not woman worship like that, it's I want to get drunk and party and whatever.
Yeah,
because degeneracy, and there's no kind of serious, real music about anything.
No.
And then the rest of the pop is all just black stuff where they don't even enunciate.
Celebration of mediocrity and blandness.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clearly between, God, whole books could be written about that, about the decline over the certain types of popular music over decades. And it's very clearly artificially made that way.
Yeah, and it's so monotonous, you know. It's like it's deliberately designed to dumb down the brain circuits in your mind, because music does have an effect on you. You know, you can be listening to live music and have a body rush. It does, it can have a very strong effect. Well, it's full of vibrations, isn't it? Sound vibrations through the air and the human voice, beautiful sound. But the stuff that I hear sometimes from my flatmate, my God, I just think how can you live and listen to this? How is it possible? You know, it's just so monotonous and tedious and meaningless. I agree that I should write more songs. It's a bit too nice to go and. The weather's a bit too nice at the moment. There'll be plenty of bad weather for me to go and hide down in my little studio.
You're getting sunlight there. You got to take advantage of it in French Isles.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I remember how the Germans would go nuts when, you know, after 5 months into the year, they finally got a nice, sunny 75-degree day, and they would all go out and take off their tops and lie around. It was great.
Yeah, usually naked. They like getting naked, don't the Germans?
They're not like Americans, but they would enjoy it when it was rarely nice, because the rest of the time there's a lot of 2 feet of snow or whatever, or at least rainy and overcast and dreary.
Yeah.
You can write all the songs in the winter.
Yeah. It's 7 o'clock. It's 7 o'clock.
We've gone on quite a long time. Yeah. I held you up a lot longer than 40 minutes. Had you ever been to the USA?
Yeah. But a long time ago, when my daughter was little. I've been to Canada more recently. Did the tourist thing. Yeah, they almost wanted to keep me in Canada, but they found out too late that I was there. Somebody reported that I did a gig in Calgary. I did a whole series of gigs across Canada with Paul Fromm in 2017.
So you're a brave woman. I personally would not risk going to Canada. I wouldn't even take a chance. I was on their thing for fear of being called up.
Yeah, they wrote about me. Country. They wrote about me. That was the first time the BBC wrote about me, and it was BBC Canada or BBC North America because I was doing these gigs. I did a gig with Monica. We played together there in Edmonton and in Calgary. It was a really nice.
The main guy there is Paul Fromm, and I know that Jan knows him too. And Jan met him when he was over in the North America.
That's right. So. Yes, he organized everything, and they found out about this gig of I think it had been advertised on Facebook or something. And so the next day, they tried that there was articles in several newspapers saying, "Oh, blogger, Jewish groups concerned about bloggers' attendance in Canada giving gigs. We just got all these threats to Jewish communities and synagogues." But later turned out to have been by that young Israeli who'd been sending all these threats. They never apologized to me that, you know, I was to blame for these threats. And, you know, anyway, I managed to get out. I managed to get in Canada with no problem, and I managed to get back out again.
That's good.
But I don't think I would risk it again. And Kermar suggested that I could come to the United States and that it would be possible to do it, but I'd have to do it with some kind of marriage proposal, somebody loved, not from him, but from some kind of marriage proposal. I could get into the United States, and there, you see, I would never have been prosecuted for my songs in the United States. It's still a very tiny little
That's true.
Population revisionism in the United States, but still I would be able to, you know, go around and...
yeah, they're not at the level where they could really... I mean, if they found out about it and you had some kind of income, they would definitely go after it, but legally they can't. They keep creeping around and trying to, you know, make it illegal to boycott Israel.
Yeah.
Some of these, they precedent more at the state level now and try to get it illegal to criticize Jews on campus or to support Palestine on campus is what they've been doing the last few years. And then for everyone else, they don't really so much try to get them legally for that. They just expose their name and come.
Yeah, that's right. That's what they do too.
They do not want anyone having any kind of money who criticizes them.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, how? So did they ever like try to, I don't know, I don't think you mentioned this, but like seize your passport or anything like that. How does that work?
No, they've not done that. They just, they stopped me. They banned me from entering France last August. That's the only time I've been turned back. And I've not been anywhere since then, not tried to go anywhere.
I mean, I guess if I were like you, like UK or whatever, I'd want to go to Australia, but Australia is just as bad.
Yep.
Oh, for the weather, if anything.
But and it's so far away. It's just a long way.
It's so casual to just tell people they should pick up and move somewhere else because it's very, very hard.
Yes, it is. You know, and I did live out of my country for 22 years in Switzerland. It's not far away. It's only an hour on the plane.
Yeah.
But still, you know, I wanted to come back to my roots. And, well, I've come back to my roots and been persecuted and prosecuted for singing songs. Well, I will be able to dine out on this story for the rest of my life, though. You know, it's not all bad. I'm going to write a book. It's called Jailed for a Song. But it's kind of like, you know,
excellent.
There's lots of parts that have been written, and it needs to be compiled and published. But that's my project.
It's a good project. Well, have you thought at all about going back to Switzerland? Or is that, I don't know how they are in this. I know they're a little more lenient, but
maybe. Well, I would try and get in maybe via.
And I know
Switzerland's
ridiculously expensive. I know that too.
Yes, high standard of living for sure.
Yeah.
I know.
One time I met a guy here who was selling like organic beef, and he was from Switzerland. He was just like. To them, it's like, oh, there's so much land and it's so cheap compared to Switzerland.
Yeah, it's a tiny country, Switzerland. When I was there 20 years ago, it was 10 million inhabitants, which is the population of London today, 10 million inhabitants with 1 million immigrants because of its geographical situation. There's lots of Portuguese, Italian, Dutch.
How does this free speech laws vary by canton, or is it now federalized like Jews always try to make it a centralized dictatorship?
I think it reflects the German speaking nations that it's worse for German speakers. But there's Jürgen Graf, he's Germar's big colleague, Graf Martonio. He's Italian, but Graf, he was Swiss and he had to flee. I think he lived in Moscow for quite a number of years, but he's back there now. I think that they realize that it's not really having the desired effect, because in fact prohibiting speech and prohibiting historical debate and discussion and academic studies because of to stop people doing this, to stop academics and to stop Giordani from performing, people's curiosity is to know why are there laws banning this these people, this academic Robert Forison, why was he banned? Jürgen Graf, an engineer who wrote about the gas chambers, why has he been in prison for 12 years? People ask questions, and there's been a lot of support for Giordani from figures, from brave figures, like there's a Swiss athlete. He made a Cornell. He won a race sprint, I think, and did a Cornell. But he didn't get prosecuted. So there is a kind of, you know, they will turn a blind eye in some situations, but not for the real hardcore people like Sylvia and Sylvia Stoltz and Horst Mahler. He, I think, in October, he will be released in October.
Horst Mahler will be.
Yes, and his 2 feet now. He's had both legs amputated below the knee.
Do you know?
That's horrible.
2000, and my partner, I haven't talked to her in many years, but she was translating for him into English Regina Belzer. I don't know if she's even still alive, but she was, yeah, she met up, or she knew German really well, and she was translating Horst Mahler. I thought, I actually, to be honest, I'm embarrassed, but I thought he had died.
No, he's still alive. He was in a bad way. You know, he had to have his other foot amputated last year, I think, sometime. But no, he was released in October.
That is fantastic. That's absolutely news. I've never heard that from anyone anywhere. So that's fantastic.
I can send you the link. It was a German friend who sent me a link the other day. Somebody, if the Jews are complaining about it.
No, I've not seen his name mentioned in at least 2-3 years, I don't think. I honestly thought he was dead.
You know, he was released briefly for health reasons, but then they put him back inside. Because
Is he insane mind? Is he still competent mentally?
Well, before he was briefly released, he responded. He wrote a book in prison and managed to get it smuggled out on a stick, on a flash drive.
Yeah.
And it was a response to Gilad Atzmon's The Wandering Who. Now, I've not read Horst's book. I think it only exists in German. But he was, again, done for this, for his response to Gilad. And I translated. He made a couple of videos. And, in fact, someone translated it into French, and I translated from French into English. Mm-hmm. And they're on my old censored YouTube channel sites, but unfortunately without the subtitles. But he studied, when he was in prison, he studied the Old Testament and talks about the Old Testament in relation to Jews and Jews today. He talks about Isaiah and the book of Isaiah and another one I can't remember. And he got quite a lot of criticism from other people in the revisionist movement who I think would be the Christian type people, these traditional Christians, Catholics, whatever. He got quite a lot of criticism for that. But no, he's a very strong mind still. And because he was with the Red Army faction.
He's a leftist, became a nationalist.
That's right. So he had all this time to think about and write in prison. He had a computer. He was able to write this book. It was interesting at the time. I was motivated to translate because I wanted people to hear this video because of what he was saying about Antifa in particularly. And he gave quite a lot of interesting quotes about Marx and these Marxists. He was saying, you know, these do-gooders, these are the people we need to try and convince. So I think some ground has been made with the left and with Antifa, realizing that they don't have the arguments, the logical arguments that, you know, uphold their own supposed ideology. They just can't do it, as you were saying earlier, Alex. They just have no no response. So yeah, he's an interesting guy, and of course with this long history, many years in prison for speech crimes, and it'll be interesting to see, because I'm sure people will want to interview with him when he is released, he did try to flee to Hungary, but the Hungarians sold him out, and he went back to Germany and straight to prison. That was in 2017.
That's terrible.
He's been in jail. It must have been over 10 years at this point, or pretty close, if not.
Yeah, with a short break. He's in a hospital prison. It's costing the taxpayer a fortune because he's got these health problems and he can't get around. He needs a wheelchair and a permanent carer.
Well, he was old when he went in. I mean,
yeah, he's 80s, 80, early 80s, I think.
Yeah, this is just absurd the way they persecute, you know, these old Germans. Germans should be embarrassed.
It really is horrible.
The Germans stood up and got smashed in the end, and I don't know what was left if you could hold them accountable for anything, really. But I don't know what elements of manly Germans are really truly left. It's hard to say, but it's not like it's a bunch better in England or the U.S.
Well, they have got the AfD, you know, like I was saying, they do have a populist party. At least that's something. We've got nothing similar in Britain, nothing at all. UKIP, all these, no. Nothing. They've got tiny memberships, whereas the AfD have done really well, and so is, you know, Marine Le Pen doing well. She does have a platform and is a figure, a mediatic figure, despite the fact that, you know, she's obviously hated and will always be considered to be a Nazi and neo-Nazi because her father, Jean-Marie Le Pen, and all this. So I can't see a Le Pen ever gaining electoral success in France, but maybe somebody else might, you know, if the Le Pens can release their grip on the national rally, as it's called now. But yeah, at least there is this in Europe that they are, you know, they have got these big populist movements, Salvini in Italy, the Vox party in Spain, but we haven't got anything remotely similar in Britain. The BNP was the nearest thing, and that's been dead for the past 10 years.
Yeah, so it just gets smashed down from legal treatment, it seems like, over time.
Yeah, and these are ever more stringent race laws. Yeah, let's call them what they are, race laws that are set in place to make sure that Jews retain their privileged status in our society.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
Alison, I always wonder whether Britain isn't the country where Jews have had the longest period of time to really figure out how to totally control whites, and that they've got this thing down to a T.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's pretty much everywhere, but I do feel a great deal of the... I am quite ashamed at the way that Britain is just... bent over, basically allowed itself to be up the backside by people who don't belong here. No?
Yeah. When David Irving came to South Africa in the 80s, I know a person who was organizing his visits here. She said to me that one day David Irving turned around and he said that he thinks the whites of South Africa have got a better chance of survival than the British. That's what David Irving said to him.
Yeah. And you mentioned in your email the Brits joining the Rhodesian army to fight against the Brits.
Now that's a whole. That's a whole other story.
Maybe we should. I'm a bit out of time there because it's
no problem.
It's getting on for 8:30, but we can chat another time if you like. I'd quite like to get off to the shop before.
Well, we've really enjoyed talking to you, and I know it's taken a lot of time.
To you.
Sorry about that, but it's fascinating to hear not only your own personal case, but just to hear what you think about UK politics as a whole.
Definitely,
it's just a disaster. Disaster.
We'll bring Alison back, and then we'll talk to her some more.
We can talk about Rhodesia.
We can talk about a few other things. Okay.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks so much for the invitation. It's been really nice speaking to you again. And we should keep it up. Yeah.
All right. Well, keep sending me. You send me your when you update your blog about your case and whatever. I know that you send that to me, and I put that on kirksvilletoday.com. So
yes,
that's
thank you.
Helpful.
Thank you. Yes, very much.
Yeah, we wish you the best going
yes,
forward.
Yes, I'll keep you updated.
Bogus charges you face for writing songs. I mean, as absurd as that sounds, that's the reality of it.
It is. It is. I was jailed for a song in the United
jailed
Kingdom.
Jailed for a song. And in look England. For the book when it comes out, too.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks. We'll talk to you.
Have a good day.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
Alex, one thing I wanted to mention while we were talking to Alison is that I know that you talk about Mary Fagan and Leo Frank, and I don't think you're aware that earlier this year, I actually had a chance to talk to a famous Jew here in South Africa, a guy called a communist called Ronnie Kasrils, and I actually recorded the discussion. He was doing a book review because he'd written his third book. And a friend of mine said to me, you know, Jan, it's not far away from you. You can go and attend it. And I went to this place, and my friend also came with. And there was Kasrils. And Kasrils, Alex, is like a top communist Jew. If you ever want, I can show you a few things about him. This guy's top, top, top. He was in Parliament. He held various ministerial positions. He was even the Minister of Intelligence. And in the Communist Party itself, Kasrils was almost like the Secretary General of the Communist Party. Now, I actually spoke to him in about 1993 to 1995. At that time when South Africa was going into black rule, I decided to try and phone the Communist Party because I'd heard that they have a Communist Party journal called the African Communist. And I'd heard about this thing and I thought, let me try and get hold of it so that I can see what these communists are up to. So Alex, I phoned the Communist Party with the landlines in those days. And I said to them, listen, I'm very interested in communism. I'd like to speak to somebody. I want to get some literature. And to my amazement, they put me through to Kasrils himself. And Alex, I must have had a 20-minute discussion with Ronnie Kasrils back then. And then I said to him, oh, I'm so interested in communism, you know, and I'm looking for stuff. And he started boasting about his book. He'd written a book, Armed and Dangerous, about his Alex, he was a terrorist, a Jewish terrorist in South Africa, blowing up infrastructure. No jokes. And everything's in his book. And then he told me where to get the African Communist and all the literature. We had a long, friendly discussion, and that's how I managed to find where I could get the stuff and buy it and then read it, because I wanted to see what these communists back then. I didn't realize Jews and communism, but back then I just looked on communism. And anyway, so here now, almost 25 years later, 27 years later, here's a friend saying, you know, we can meet the same guy. He's at a place where some Jewish people are going to have a chat about his book, and I can go there. And I went there, Alex, and I took a couple of photographs, and then I tried to record the whole session. And it worked out well. I said to the lady, can I photograph? And she said, yes, yes, no problem. And then I recorded the whole thing. And I got the whole recording. It's an hour and three quarters where Kasrils talks. And many of the people there, Alex, were Jews. And I got all of their comments and everything. And then I got a chance to ask him a question. I posed him a question about South Africa and Nazis and everything. He answered everything, and I got it, and I put out some videos. But in this presentation, Kasrils then suddenly at a point started talking about a woman known as she was known as Bubbles Schroeder, but her real name Bubbles was just like a nickname. Her real name was Yakuba Schroeder. She was an Afrikaans girl. She was a bit of a party girl. And she was murdered in 1949. And the last three guys who, on the night of her murder, she was with three Jewish men. And he then spoke about, oh, you know, Bubbles Schroeder was murdered, and I mentioned it in the book, and I go into the details, and then he goes on about Bubbles Schroeder. Now, what actually happened is that these three Jews were the main suspects, and the police arrested the three Jews and charged them with the murder of Bubbles Schroeder. But they got off the hook, Alex, just like Mary Fagan. They got off the hook. There was no other suspects. There was no other evidence. Those were the only people she was with on the night of her murder. They dropped her off at a place. She was murdered. She was found dead near the place where she was dropped off, etc. And this girl, and you know what? Kasrils even mentioned, Alex, he even mentioned that goodness, now my memory's going. Kasrils, my memory's going. God. me just try and think of what I was going to say.
This is in 2020.
No, this is in 1939. 1949.
No, I know. I mean, but when you heard Azrael speak, yes, it was this year?
Yes, it was in January this year, January the 25th. So, Kazrael's spoke about it. Ah, yes. And guess what, Alex? Kazrael's then says to all the people, he says, oh, you know, and one of the three accused is still alive, and he was contacting me, and he's going to write a book about it, and he wants my advice. And here these Jews are, and they're talking about this murder and everything. And Alex, people in South Africa who've looked into the murder of Bubbles Schroeder, they always ask, why was nobody found guilty? There were only three suspects. All three of them were Jews. And do you know that all three of those Jews went on to become very wealthy in South Africa? And I found on the internet, I found that one of the Jews at a point had a company. And in the company, there was fraud. Some person discovered fraud going on in the company. And that Jew, who was one of the accused, the next thing you know is that the person in his company who discovered the fraud dies, gets murdered. The Jew also appears in court, but just to appear in court, he wasn't like charged with it. And also, you know, nothing found, etc. So, Alex, I think Bubbles Schroeder is the kind of Mary Fagan of South Africa, and you'll find that these Jews are going to lie about the murder of Bubbles Schroeder and why it isn't a Jew and why it's got to be somebody else, blah, blah, blah. But it officially remains like a, quote, unsolved murder in South Africa. And I've got everything out of the mouth of Ronnie Kazrael's, and he even says, oh, you know, I actually knew like Jaime or whoever was one of the accused. I even stayed with him, blah, blah, blah. And all these Jews, my man, they all stick together. But, yeah, so I think Bubbles.
Well, it would be interesting to see like a write-up. Is there any place the thing has been written up from a white perspective would be my question.
People have written it up, but nobody has written it up from a white perspective, no. Nobody's written it up from a white perspective, but the general story is out there. And Alex, before I went to the USA, I must tell you, I was going through some books on South African crimes, and I was looking to see if I could find any crimes to do with Jews. And I found two fascinating stories that people don't know. The one had to do with the first white woman who was hanged in South Africa. And she was hanged. She was an Afrikaans lady. She had married a Jew. She, like many of the Boers, she lived on a farm, and she only had a farm. I think her husband had died. And so she had a farm, and she was not surviving on the farm. Farm was not making a profit. So she married a Jew, and she even had to like pay the Jew for his services to make her farm profitable, and her farm still wasn't becoming profitable. And then the Jew had set her up in such a way that basically she could end up losing her farm to him. And that would mean she'd have no form of income, no assets, nothing. So there was another white guy who was in love with her, and she and the white guy and some blacks murdered the Jew. And she was later found guilty, and she was the first woman in South Africa to be hanged. But even in South Africa, they don't even mention that story. They, like in many cases where a Jew is involved, they talk about another murder and another woman as the first one hanged in South Africa. But this woman was actually the first. She was hanged about 20 years before the other murder. And this thing revolved around a Jew. But the most fascinating story that I found, Alex, I still want to do a video about it, is a Jew in Johannesburg, a rich Jew. must have murdered his own wife. All the evidence, it's also another South African unsolved Jew murder case, right? All of these are unsolved, right? Except for the farm one. The Jew's wife was murdered, and there was no evidence pointing to anybody, and I think the last person who saw her was him. And when the police investigated, this is in the time of apartheid, when the police investigated, he said he tried to say that blacks had come to murder her. So the police went and looked to see if there was evidence for blacks, etc. They could find absolutely nothing. But this Jew, Alex, engaged in the strangest behavior. Everything he did was so weird. And he would go away, and then he'd come to the police, and he'd say he saw the guys, and he saw them in a place, and they were there, and then they disappeared. He like invented new stories and invented all kinds of things. And people were running around looking for all these things he's pointing to, and none of it's real. And eventually the police just let the thing go. But if you look at the circumstantial evidence, it's basically he probably murdered his own wife, tried to blame it on others, came up with all kinds of weird moves, and eventually they just let the case go. And, you know, also Jew gets away with probably in this case murdering his own wife. But some really weird stuff from South Africa that nobody's mentioned before. But Bubbles Schroeder is definitely the big one. Three Jews were the only men with her on the night of her murder. And this Afrikaans girl was killed. So, anyway. So I think that's pretty much it. And a final thing, I saw a news story in Yemen, in Africa. They were busy rounding up the Jews and getting rid of the Jews, expelling the Jews from Yemen. So we might have the 110th expulsion of Jews. Can you believe, from Africa?
It's wonderful that all the you understand that Iran backed, what are they, Houthis or something?
Yes.
Anyone pronounce that, but Houthi. The Iran backed side, I guess, is winning. And eventually threatening the whole area of Saudi Arabia, the other big one the U.S. props up. So that's fantastic, because they're all anti-Jew.
Yes.
So Iran has really been doing a good job, and that's why probably part of the reason there's all these bogus, unaccounted for explosions in Iran recently.
Yes, probably.
We know the Jews have a history of software warfare against them, as well as assassination.
Alex, another topic that we can talk about maybe on another show is the war of Muslims against blacks in Africa, and it's going bigger and bigger.
Yes.
And you know what? It's even got to one of our neighboring countries, Mozambique. I was over the moon. I'm like, yes, the Muslims are busy fucking up the blacks. I'm loving it. They're killing each other. Awesome.
Apparently, like what I was saying about real estate, is I was just hearing that's true in St. Louis too. People are trying to get away from there now, the way they're trying to get away from Chicago,
Alex,
because of the COVID and the coons.
Alex, all this is good. I think we're heading towards wilder times, and maybe the time for insurrections and revolution is coming. I'm not unhappy about any of this. I like it. This is the chaos I've been talking about for a long time, where I've said to people, embrace the chaos. Embrace it. Chaos is going to work for us whites. That's what we need. We need this. So, yeah.
All right. And that will bring to a close this edition of Team White. We heard from Alison Chablot, a songwriter in the UK, and she talked about politics there as well as her own individual persecution by the Jews, from the Jews. And we heard about Europe more generally. So thanks for being with us today. And we'll be back with you again real soon. Just Jan and I, and we'll talk about such things as COVID and black violence in the U.S. and the spread of Muslim activity across black Africa and a lot of the wars going on there. So again, thanks for being with us. This is Team White signing off.
These are Alex Linder's websites, www.alexlinder.com, pieville.net. That's his Twitter type of website, www.vnnforum.com. You'll find a ton of information on there. And then his news website, which is www.kirksvilletoday.com. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.